I feel like I need like a dun da 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 or some kind of special effect, but I don't have any. But this is Ladies with Gumption episode 100. And it's like weird that it happened so perfectly, but our episode 100 is covering the first half of the crisis. This episode is titled Crisis Management. I am Jessica. I am doing your intro today, and I'm here with
May
and Tatiana.
We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash, even though this will probably not be in a flash. It'll be very detailed because we've got a lot to cover. If you want to get in on the conversation action, you can contact us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com on Tumblr to send us an ask, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. If you want to send an email, you can talk to us on Twitter at DCTVGumption. You can listen to our episodes, all 99 plus this one, on our Podomatic page, iTunes, their podcast app, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or probably wherever else you can listen to stuff online. Let's see.
Oh, you know, I got an email saying that, yeah, Apple Podcasts on Alexa.
Nice.
Great. Alexa, play Ladies with Gumption. That's what you should do now. So anyway, we also have a Patreon, and we'd like to thank all of our Patreon members for subscribing to us and helping us keep our podcast afloat. And as a thank you, we do give Patreon members 24-hour early access to the episodes. And also, since we're heading into winter hiatus, next week you'll get some Patreon exclusives, one of which will be The Watchmen, which whose finale is this week, so it's actually happening at the perfect time. Mm-hmm. And we'll be able to do that soon and have that uploaded for you guys. In the news, we have a lot of big DCEU news. The Wonder Woman 84 trailer came out. Any thoughts or impressions on that?
Oh, I mean, I thought it was a lot of fun. It looks like it's going to be like a cheese ball, but like in a good way.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I'm still like questions about how Steve Trevor is there, or what's going on. Is he just like Captain America? But...
Yeah. I really liked it. I think it was, I mean, it looks great. The mm-hmm. action, like her swinging on the lightning was really, really awesome to see.
Awesome.
The gold outfit, everything about aesthetic was amazing. And shout out to the mall I used to go to as a kid that has been shut down for like 15 years at this point. That's where they shot the mall scenes, and they didn't have to, like, someone on Twitter was going about how they recreated it to look like the 80s. I was like, they didn't have to. It was built in the 80s. That's actually what it looks like. They just, you know, they added stuff, but but yeah, I think it looks really fun. I can't believe they made, was it Pedro Pascal?
Yes. And
yeah, I can't believe how, like, I did, right. I was like, why? He's so good looking, and like, what did you do to him? So that's crazy. But yeah, it was, I mean, I'm very excited for it.
So we have a lot of, going off of that, a lot of DCEU release date news. Birds of Prey comes out first in February, February the 7th. And I feel like there was like a new trailer because I saw like a lot more Dinah gifts that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
So that's coming up in February. Wonder Woman 84 debuts on June the 5th, 2020. The Batman movie is June the 25th in 2021. Suicide Squad is August 6th of that year. And then you have Black Adam on December the 22nd. And then going into, I think I meant to say December 16th of 2022. Or no, I'm lying. No, maybe it is December. I don't know. Black Adam is coming out in December in some kind of year.
Then oh, yeah, no, it's coming out next, I think next year, because Shazam 2 is coming out 6 months after that.
Okay.
Right.
So yeah. So Black Adam is in December 22nd of 2021. Then you have Shazam 2 on April the 1st of 2022, and then Flash on July 1st of 2022.
Or so they say.
That.
Yeah.
And we're so skeptical.
It's like, I don't believe that for a second.
I don't believe you. And then Aquaman on December 16th of 2022. Yeah. That's what
so
it
we
was.
Finally have a slate for the worlds of DC or whatever we're calling. I feel like they said, we're not calling it the DCEU, but it's still the DCEU. You haven't changed anything.
Basically. Yeah, I haven't seen anything formal about it in any of the articles that I read calling it the worlds of DC. So
yeah.
Yeah, I like DCEU. It's a nice, easy alphabet. So
exactly.
It's going to stay that way until we hear otherwise. But also in DCU, CW news, we had a Stargirl trailer, and then Stargirl is kind of like tornadoed or torpedoed before it even began, because people are on Twitter looking up Breck Basinger's old tweets, and they came back to bite, because apparently there's one of her next to Donald Trump's star in like 2016, like, yo, look, it's a star, but whatever. Oh. About the actual trailer, do we have any thoughts about the actual show?
To be honest, I haven't seen it, so my thoughts are irrelevant.
what show are we talking about now?
Stargirl.
Yeah, the Stargirl trailer came out.
Oh, I didn't watch the trailer either.
Okay, well, I was only going to watch the trailer, I guess. But I thought, I thought it looked different.
Because it premiered right after Crisis. I was like, oh, I'll watch it later, and I never got around to it.
Yeah, because what came out first was the Trump thing, right? And by the way, she did respond to someone saying that it had been sarcasm. Like, she was saying, you're a star on the ground. Not, you know? So that's what she said. But then she deleted the main tweets, and people wouldn't stop coming at her, and I guess it deleted the whole thread. So that's gone. But whatever. So if that is true, then I can, in good conscience, watch the trailer. And yes, go on, tell us what the trailer is like, because we haven't seen it.
There was like a lot of like action. It was a little bit dark, which apparently is like the DCU brand of lighting.
oh God. But
yeah, it had some, you know, they're like moving to like a new place, and she finds the staff, that used to be her dad's, and you see like a couple of action shots of her. There wasn't as much. I feel like there was another like mini, not even a trailer, but like a little snippet of something. Mm-hmm. But it was like her and like four other kids, and like they were her team or whatever. They're clearly all like high school age. And so I feel like it could be like a really good like high school teen type show. But right. The actual trailer was more focused on, like, the staff, and you got to see her in the suit and, like, a couple of action shots. So a little bit two opposite kind of angles, like, to look at the show. So we'll see if we get any more kind of official trailers or sneak peeks to see what that kind of looks like. But there was a lot of, I think it was a lot of, like, her and her dad and or, like, the adults. So not a lot of, like, kid interaction in the show, in the trailer. So, whatever.
I see.
Yeah. Also, in CW News, we have word from Paparazzi, and then we have an official article saying that Kenan is back on set for The Flash, and he's officially back for episode 614 of The Flash. I know 613 was called Grodd Friended Me.
Okay, so it won't be Grodd that he's fighting.
Right. And this, I think from the article, like, Eric Wallace was saying that it was an old, like, a familiar villain with a new face. Mm. So, I think that, you know, it's either Reverse Flash, but not Tom's face, and not Matt's face.
Interesting. Or,
we had Godspeed in the beginning of the season, and he was not wearing his face. Like, it was somebody else.
Oh, so yeah.
That could come back. So, I kind of feel like it's going to be Godspeed. But not Godspeed.
right.
They're also saying that Wally, they're doing a new fresh take on Wally, because apparently he's been in Tibet while the world was ending, fixing his life. And now when he's coming back, it's going to be like a brand new take on Wally West. So we'll see what that looks like.
I'm intrigued because, well, like, we don't know much about 6B because of Crisis. Yeah. So it's like it's all one big mystery.
I thought it was funny when they released the pictures today. And I was like, okay, I mean, we know they're all going to live, but thanks for letting us know.
So we got that first look of Iris in, like, the Star Labs med bay with, like, a bandage on her arm looking at something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And we also got a from Legends, like, they were on a panel for a mockumentary, so they released that picture.
But I think the Legends season starts before Crisis.
Yes. Yeah. I believe they said, I couldn't find a tweet because I was writing an article about it today, but I couldn't find the showrunner's tweet about it. But she did say, I remember, it'll be the fifth episode, technically, like chronologically, not the first. So I feel
Which is interesting because, like, we know Sarah's supposed to get, like, superpowers, but she hasn't displayed any superpowers in Crisis. So I wonder if that's going to happen later, like post-Crisis. superpowers or, you know, what that's going to look like.
Yeah. I feel like the first 5 episodes will have, like, you know, Rey's there and then he'll leave. I don't know if that will happen at the end of Crisis because... Okay, I have a prediction that I'll just go.
All right, save it. We'll save it later. And on that note, we'll get into like the actual episode so we can talk through all of this. The format, we have Superbat on side A, Supergirl and Batwoman, and then on side B, Flash of Lightning, Flash and Black Lightning. We'll talk about what sparked joy, what did not spark joy, our predictions for the latter half of the crossover next year, and what's happening on Black Lightning, and then we'll crown a Lady with Gumption of the Week. Our host this week is Tatiana. She got the dubious honor of going through this massive episode. On side A, Supergirl and Batwoman, Age of Heroes / Welcome to the Joy Zone.
Welcome to the Joy Zone, LOL.
Yes.
All right. So we start off with Supergirl, part 1 of the Crisis on Infinite Earths, the kickoff to the epic television crossover event in which the Monitor sends Harbinger to gather the world's greatest heroes. Including, of course, our very own Supergirl, The Flash and his 5 lines, Green Arrow, Batwoman, White Canary, which I forgot is what we called her, so we'll just call her Sarah, The Atom, and Tyler Hoechlin, Superman. Now that their worlds, especially Earth 38 and Argo, are in imminent danger, they must suit up for battle, while John and Alex recruit Lena to help them find a way to save the people of Earth 38. So Jesse Warren directed the episode. The story was by Robert Rovner and Mark Guggenheim. Teleplay was by Derek Simon and Jay Farber. Lots of people, lots of cooks in this kitchen. So what sparked the most joy about the first part of Crisis?
Yeah. I mean, this episode was kind of like a nice introduction to Crisis, I think, especially like the intro, because it's like it kind of worked like if you hadn't been watching the shows, here's the multiverse, this is how it works, and now we're gonna blow up Earths, and that's pretty much it. So we had like Earth 89 cameo from the Tim Burton, I think it was like Alexander something, that reporter that was in that movie was in it with the newspaper. And then you had like, we saw a glimpse of the Titans for whatever moment they were on the screen.
Earth 9. I wonder what the connection is for that one.
Yeah, I don't know. And I thought it was weird that they chose specifically Jason Todd and Hank to be in the shot for Titans rather than having like more recognizable faces, I guess, like to Dick. Other people. Yeah. Like Dick and Starfire. Like, okay. But at least we know they exist in the multiverse somewhere. Right before they probably vanished. I'm struggling to think, but like all the cameos were pretty good. And then it was just generally a well-paced episode, I think. Kara got a lot of spotlight, which was nice because everybody was really worried that she was just going to get sidelined again. But I think so far she's had a lot of decent stuff, especially with Kate. You know, they built up their friendship in this episode because I liked when, like, Kate first came to Earth 38 along with, like, Green Arrow and whatnot, that it was because of Kara that made her, you know, reveal her identity and trust what was going on. So that was like that continuation of that friendship was really great. And then in terms of, there was more urgency in this episode than in like episode 2, for example. So there's like them trying to save Earth 38. It was like the first time we really got to see people panicking. I like that Alex went to recruit Lena to get her to help out, to send like however many billion, they say like 3 billion people to send to Earth 1, which makes no sense, but they did, and they saved people.
I'm really proud with that.
Yeah. But it was nice, like, their tension, like, I like that at least with, they had Crisis, and then they still had the fact that, oh, Lena still has a plan, she's still being petty, like, that storyline was still, you know, going on, and then that tension between her and Alex worked really well in this episode, even though, you know, Lena's like, oh, well, if it's to save the world, I will join you. But that doesn't make us friends. What else? I really like the fact that we did, I mean, for however long, we did see Argo and we saw the people trying to work to help each other, even though they only had that dumb one pod. We did get to see, like,
your life.
Yes. We had Kara's mom show up again, and then we had that like cute little scene between Lois and Clark, and then that nice conversation between Clark and Kara about, you know, how do you go on after such grief and you know, your Earth dying again. Like, it's just the L family has to suffer forever with watching their people just disappear, which kind of sucks, but at least it led to like a nice conversation between them. And, you know, Kara has always been like the forever optimist. And it was nice that it was after that, I think it was like revealed that she was the paragon of hope. She was the first one to be revealed as a paragon, which is really nice because I think that really suits her. And she just had like some nice moments with Clark and with Kate, and she kind of, you know, she spearheaded the episode in a lot of ways. She took control. She got everyone on board to help. She, Brainy was great this episode. Like, his interactions with everybody were really fun to watch. And I really liked the fact that we still had like Nia, whom they've forgotten for several episodes, back in this episode,
yep,
to actually help people evacuate the Earth. And then you had Kelly's, like, a nice nod to, she used like James's shield, which was great. Yeah, it was like really unexpected, and I like that it was a good moment for her too. Like, you know, kind of bringing back the argument that like, oh, well, she's human, but she can still like contribute. This idea that it's not just the superheroes who can save people, which is really great. Yeah, I mean, overall, I think that it was a pretty good start to Crisis, and then it was fairly evenly paced, and it had a lot of like good character moments with a lot of urgency to like save this planet from being destroyed.
Yeah, I agree. I like that, especially that Kara felt mostly front and so, because there's been crossovers in the past and crossovers in general where that hasn't been the case, or she hasn't been on the same level of material as Oliver and Barry, even though she's the third pair or the third line in that like trinity. So it was really good that she was like front and center for this episode. She and Clark got a lot of space to explore their feelings on the loss of Argo and then eventually the loss of Earth-38. And I particularly liked their talk at the Dio about having hope, like right after Argo got destroyed. And it's like Clark that's really, really down, and he gets strength from Kara, who still has like this abundance of hope that, you know, things can be better or work out, or they can still save the world. And I feel like it just really underscored afterwards why she was revealed to be the paragon of hope, because I think that like conversation between them really showed that and showed how her hope shines through even when other people just don't have any hope left. I think the preview of the worlds was a nice touch, like you're saying, like how we got like a little, I think there's also like Earth 66 with
oh yes,
Robin.
With yeah. Robin, yeah, and he was walking his little dog.
Holy red skies! Well, he's like, holy red skies, Batman, or something like that. It was like,
it was like, really holy red skies of death.
Yeah, holy red skies of death. Like, that was great. Let's see. And I thought it was, like, a nice touch that, you know, it was Earth 66 because it was in the 60s, and, like, a lot of the other Earths, like, the Smallville Earth that we see in the Batwoman episode is Earth 67, because that's the number of episodes that Al Gore wrote, or... Yeah, there's connection there. And then Earth 89, like you said, with Batman movie, and the same thing with a lot of the other Earths. So I thought that was kind of a nice touch. I don't, like, that's why I said I don't know how Earth 9 got in there and what that means to the Titans, but I thought it was kind of cool how they did that. Earth 666 with Lucifer, we find out later, all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was cool. Bringing back Spike the Komodo Dragon is like really like a little one, but it was really nice to see him again. From last season, and I think it was a good way to lead into the Crisis storyline, because like the whole thing was like animals are like freaking out, and animals are really sensitive and indicators of like natural disasters about to happen. So I like that they were able to bring back Spike to do that,
yeah,
to lead into,
yeah,
Crisis. Yeah. I thought that was pretty ingenious way to do it. And I agree, the Supergirl Hour felt like appropriately paced with appropriately high stakes. And I thought they did the best of overall of utilizing all of their main cast members within the crossover episode, within their portion of it. Everybody had something to do, even if it was only just for like one scene. Like Nia and Kelly were only there to like evacuate people, but at least they got a check for that episode. I also like the small but like really great moment of like Brainy and Ray nerding out with each other, and Brainy's like, finally someone of my intellect on the ship. So that was good. Sarah and Earth 16 Oliver had like a really nice moment and talk, and how you know, we only saw this Oliver for a couple of minutes, and they didn't invite him back with them, even though they knew his world was going to blow up. But like, for his guilt of not being able to save Hysteria, and they had that kind of really nice moment. I liked from the comics perspective that the main mission in this episode was to defend like the Quantum Towers from like the Dementor spirits or whatever, because it's straight out of the comics. And honestly, I wish there was like a lot more of that, not just specifically on Earth 8, but like seeing other towers on the other Earths and using some team, like splitting up the teams to go to different towers and like using some of the other cameos to help defend that, and maybe eventually failing and, you know, the team happened to like fall back or whatever. I wanted to see more of that. I think it was a nice touch to the comics, but I wish they could have like done more, because I thought that was really good.
Yeah. Starting off, I liked a lot the cameos that we got to see, and I think that it's really interesting to get to witness how expansive the DC universe or universes, the multiverse, is, even though we're only getting a glimpse of them when they are, you know, being destroyed. But if you have any connection whatsoever to that Earth, you know, then you feel something when you see those characters go away, right? And at the same time, because like, people could easily be really mad about that. They're like, I can't believe you only brought them back just to kill them. But with all of these going away at the same time, there's that like behind the scenes metatextual, if you will, knowledge that like, obviously this can't be gone for good. Like when the Titans disappear, and you know, there's a season 3 of Titans. So right. It's not like, oh, cancellation, I guess. Season 3 in the antimatter universe. So you know that to some degree it has to be set to rights. So while it's like big and epic and exciting and upsetting, it's also at the same time like almost comforting that it's so big, because it can't be that big. But the one that could potentially, like, there is some possibility of it remaining, is Earth 38 and Argo, right? Because we've always expected that Crisis will somehow merge Supergirl's world with the rest of the Arrowverse, so they'll finally be all in one universe. And now the way that they did it, which was quite horrifying, could make it happen for good. You know, there is no way of knowing whether this is going to have the long-term consequence or not. But it does, but it feels like the thing with the longest consequences. So, so I guess I liked that they start off with such a bang, because then you really feel like, okay, this is for real. You know, like things are getting serious. We're losing everything. And also we got to see kind of how Clark and Lois dealt with that, and like how Clark felt about the fact that he had to just like let Argo go. Like he couldn't do anything about it because he doesn't have powers in Argo, you know? Speaking of which, I really loved the Clark and Kara scene. I thought it was really sweet, and it was a nice balance of both of their perspectives. This episode definitely felt like Kara felt like she was at the center of it. Or at the very least, like her world was at the center of it, obviously, because it exploded. But also because we got to see the majority of her cast. They all had something to do and were incorporated pretty seamlessly into the episode. And like May had already said, we finally get to see Nia after they neglected her for like 2 or 3 episodes. And they're like, I don't know a Nia. So now she finally got a check. Thank you. Nicole Maines got paid. So I was glad to see that. But I also liked, just in general, like I liked the idea, like the way that Kara was portrayed in the face of just losing, you know, her family all over again, right? Losing her mom, losing her Earth, and yet she still has to persevere. Also, including the Lena and Alex scene helps continue to progress the overall Supergirl plot. So people who are tuning in, you know, because they care about Supergirl still get to see something. And people who don't watch Supergirl can know how petty Lena is. I don't remember who it was. Someone who doesn't watch Supergirl, like, was asking me during the episode. They're like, why is Lena so petty? Is this what she's just like all the time? And I was like, no, to be fair, she wasn't really like this until she found out that Kara was Supergirl. But fair enough. So yeah, I liked that scene. And I don't know. I think I like you guys said, I liked the pacing and the stakes of the episode. I think it set up the crisis pretty well. I think that my favorite Earth in this episode may have indeed been well, first, Burt Ward's, you know, Earth 89, I think, or Earth, whatever, 66, that's right, Batman 66, Earth 66. But also, they had Earth 89, which is like Bruce and Selina, right? So, mm-hmm. Love that, too. And the fact that Titans was there disappearing, since everyone was like, oh, Titans is too good for the CW. Well, here's Titans on the CW being vaporized like they should be. So... the petty side of me loved that. And then I feel like, what do I feel like? Yeah, overall, I like how they brought the characters together. And I think that they did a good job of, like, usually the crossover will bring in, like, everybody. And then you've just got, like, 50 people just standing there not saying anything. So I think it was a good idea to sort of pare it down and only give us the, like the main person from each show, and then that way the Supergirl cast gets to actually do something Supergirl related. And also that way you get to like enjoy or focus on the cameos, which is kind of what Crisis is really all about, getting all those cameos. So yeah, it helped, I think, at least for Kara and Oliver, it helped them get more. Kara more than she normally gets, and Oliver to get just as much as he always gets because he's Oliver. So yeah, it sowed the seeds. I think I liked, you know, Oliver passing this. It did happen in this episode when Oliver passed Mia his like mantle, suit? Right? His suit. Yeah. Yeah. I liked that moment. That was sweet. even him. Died. Yeah. And then he died. And you know what? I will say that his death, like the way his that
death
he
was
went,
an actual surprise.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
It was a surprise that he went out in episode one. And so if we're just talking about like just in this episode, right? I'm watching just this episode and writing just this episode. Then him dying at the end of episode one was like, yeah, I like it. So that was positive. Not just because I hate Oliver and I want him dead, but because I think that that's, you know, like for them to kill off who is clearly the biggest hero is the Arrowverse. Is he's Arrow? For them to kill him off and then like give Mia the room to become the next Arrow over the course of Crisis so that we're prepared for her in the spinoff is a good idea.
Yeah.
And also it would presumably, hopefully, give Barry and Kara and Kate and Sarah, I can't forget about her, more to do in the next episodes because Oliver's not there sucking up all the oxygen. So if I was only, exactly, if I was just looking at this episode, that's what I would have thought. And I would have been like, okay. We're ready. Let's do this. And also just the way that he went out, well, mostly in the dislikes, but I will say that I liked that he went out saving billions, you know? Like, yeah. He saved a billion people somehow. Somehow. I don't know how, but whatever. The fact that he did that, you know, he really did sacrifice himself for the greater good. And also that he was, like, convinced that he was doing it. Like, if I die like this, then Barry and Kara will be fine. And the monitor was like, no, they won't. And he's like, yes, they will. I'm thinking it into existence. I am making it so.
Power of positive thinking.
Exactly. I thought that was funny. And the monitor's like, I mean, okay. I didn't make this deal, but okay. So there you go. Those are my likes. Oh, wait. I forgot. It showed Barry... talking into his comms right before the Harbinger came, and he was talking to Iris. So done, success. Iris got mentioned. Okay.
Someone was like, "Does that mean she got paid?" I was like, "No,
no, no, it does not." If only.
So yes.
What did not spark joy, ladies?
Oh, Jessica was laughing at me earlier because I only had a paragraph about where is Barry. So here's my where is Barry spiel. Because at the beginning of the episode, they're like, oh, where's Flash? Because he didn't show up with everybody else. And the monitor's like, he's doing reconnaissance with the Legends. Like, are we going to get to see them do it? Nope. He shows up later. So this was like a big part of my frustration with Supergirl's hour. While I'm glad that Kara got her due for the most part, because it is her show and it was her primarily her episode, Barry being absent a lot rubbed me the wrong way, because the man was like supposed to be dying this crossover and he ended up being shortchanged a lot. Like a few lines here and there. I think he said like two things maybe. And then his big conversation with Oliver came and he admitted that the monitor told him he was going to die, and it abruptly cut to Oliver hailing the monitor. And in the very next scene, Barry is with the group. Like, he's like, monitor!
No! Monitor, now!
Which, I mean, okay, that would have worked if he had gone back and him and Barry would have had a conversation about it. Instead, the very next scene, we see Barry. It's like he's with the group and that conversation is never mentioned again. I would have been like, why are you so mad? You know, like, what was the reason you were trying to talk to the monitor? So I feel like there should have been a conversation there, and it didn't happen, and it felt fake. And in general, the Trinity, so like Kara, Barry, and Oliver didn't really feel strong at all in this episode. Kara and Barry didn't interact. Oliver and Mia were the main duo outside of Supergirl's cast. And it didn't feel like they were really friends in this episode, because even if we've complained all season that, you know, Car is being ignored with regards to Crisis and it was just a Flash and Arrow problem, haha, we get to this episode and it's like they don't even talk about what's happening, like even just one scene to make it feel like these people actually, you know, maybe converse throughout the year outside of these crossovers. So it just didn't feel like solid at all. And then the monitor seemed really incompetent, because he was going on about how he no longer knows what's going to happen, the Book of Destiny, and then he had Felicity had to calibrate some book that I forgot the name of to get him to find out what the Paragons are. So it made him seem really stupid. No, it was another book that was mentioned. It wasn't the Book of Destiny.
Guardians.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I get they needed to have that Felicity not in there, but I just think it's like, I don't know. You are this cosmic being and right. You don't know who the Paragons are. Like, yeah, like you don't need an IT girl from Earth to fix this for you. You are a powerful person. I don't understand. And it just made him look dumb just to like prop up her, even though she wasn't even on screen. So that made no sense. And then how could you not know about
the
Paragons?
She didn't get a check for that either.
Yeah. And then how could you not know who the Paragons are? Like, you've been sitting there, I don't know how long, you know, apparently.
Time.
Yeah, since the beginning of time. You had Elseworlds last year. You knew, you said you had the Book of Destiny. Why did you not open it? So, I don't know. It just made him look really stupid. And then Earth 16 Oliver felt misplaced. Like, I appreciated his conversation with Sarah, but why didn't Sarah have that conversation with her Oliver? So it just felt like it wasted precious minutes of the episode trying to absolve Oliver of his guilt for an Oliver we don't know or care about.
And they did
not bring back. Because as soon as our Oliver died, I was like, oh, okay, I guess that they're going to just replace him or something. But they didn't even do that. So what was the point? And just the whole plot line of finding, like, baby Jonathan, which I get it. You know, he's a baby. You're concerned about him. But it just felt like too soon to just find him on another Earth. Like, they could have waited to see what's going to happen near the end, because since they were all going to be, you know, they were all going to disappear anyway. I just felt like it was a waste since everyone was going to die. And then Lena continuing to act all righteous when she should know she's done some shady shit. Like, this is not the time, Lena.
Right.
You are testing my patience. Save it. You know, it's just like fighting when there's doesn't need to be fighting. And it's really ridiculous. Oh, and I forgot, before I forget, Oliver's actual death scene, like when he died, was very underwhelming. I was caught between like being, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening, and laughing. I don't know.
It looked like he just got beat up in the face. Like, all you need is like Visine and a nap. Like, come on. And then he died. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And when did he have time to get an arrow that would disable the monitor? Like,
oh my God, that was okay. That's fine.
Yeah, like logistically, there was a lot of things that you're like, I don't know about that, but okay. Let's go with it.
Yeah, I feel like the Crisis, like I mentioned this earlier, but the Crisis comic storyline, my specific nitpick about it was that we should have seen some more of those worlds actually fighting in like versions of our characters. Because like that's the first thing you see in the actual Crisis comics is different versions on different Earths. Like there was an Earth where all the heroes were actually villains, and you know, all these kind of people are in the middle of fighting and disappearing through with like antimatter. And I feel like I know like, you know, CW budget or whatever, but I just feel like if you're gonna do all this stuff and invite all these people and do Crisis, it would have been nice to see versions of our characters fighting and disappearing on different Earths, you know. And it kind of felt like every world was caught off guard except for Earth 1 and Earth 38, which is kind of lame. Like Earth 1 and 38 were had some kind of like, you know, preparation to fight or got to fight for their Earth, but no other Earth got any advance warning or weren't even shown trying to fight the Earth or any chaos. And so it's like, okay, this is kind of lame. Like, is Earth 1 and 38 the monitor's favorites? Or like, is he playing favorites? I don't know. Like, what
he's
is
only
he doing?
Got so much time, okay?
Really, I guess so. But I mean, it would have added some more like depth and like inevitability of the whole thing, I think, if we had seen some other Earths like fighting and failing and other like versions of our heroes. So yeah, that was kind of a letdown a little bit, especially since we continue to not get that in the other episodes. But for this episode specifically, like the death of Argo, I mean, like it had to go, obviously. But it's annoying that there's only one escape pod and it's only big enough to fit one baby. Like how unorganized and unprepared are Kryptonians to only have prepared one escape pod? Like, you've been through this situation before. Like, this is why y'all are extinct, because y'all don't have any preparation. Like, all of those superpowers, and none of those powers include the power of prior proper planning, you know? You would think, like, Krypton, after Krypton was destroyed, like, a stockpile of escape pods would be the first thing you build on your new Earth, and, you know, whatever. They just did not do that. So I was kind of like stupid. Barry having only like four sentences the whole episode, and then like he would like Maya said he would do this thing where he would disappear and then without explanation only to reappear like with like the supers or whatever, and then have it implied after the fact that was also the reason that he was not around. Like they said when they were going to the quantum towers and everybody got there, and, you know, the conversation was like, Kara and Clark, you need to go to the roof and protect blah, blah, blah. And then they go, they disappear. And then suddenly Barry's gone. And then when the supers come back, then Barry's back. I'm like, where did he go? There's just no explanation for it whatsoever. Yeah. The Kate, when she punched Lila, I thought that was, like, unnecessary. Like, I really need her to work on her interpersonal skills. Like, I get that she was in the middle of something, but punching people? Come on. I think, like, Alex had the appropriate amount of, like, suspicion, and Kate's reaction just, like, seemed like she had no home training. Like, we don't punch people, Car. Like, Kate, when you first meet them. So that was a little bit overboard for me. And then speaking of people with attitudes, Lena's attitude, even in the face of the world ending, was, like, high-key annoying. Because, you know, like, Alex is like, I know that you're upset, but please, we need your help. And she's like, of course you think I didn't want to help, you know, because you think I'm, just because, like, the world is ending, that I wouldn't want to help because I'm evil. And that's not true. I'm like, Lena, come on. Like, no one is thinking that. She's like, no, Lena, like, she didn't want to work with, she didn't think you wanted to work with her, because you made it very clear that you didn't want to work with her. So that's not why. That's not why she was saying what she was saying. So, you know, just, like, it's frustrating. Because, like, and then in spite of herself, when she is feeling, like, positive feelings, like, she and Alex are actually working really well together. And then she, like, realizes it again that she's having fun. And she's like, don't mistake this for friendship. Like, shut up. Like, unclench and just admit that you have missed having friends. Things would be so much better if you could just, like, admit that you miss having friendships. Like, forgiveness is an adult human emotion, so, like, learn it, please. That was just, yeah. Even in the face of death, like, Lena still has to be petty. Whatever. It's like, at this moment, you're only a part officially in this pity party because you want to be in this pity party. And so that's when, you know, you just, I would just have to, like, detach and let go. because it's clear that she doesn't want to be happy, which is stupid.
Right.
Also, like, I have, like, a huge, like, issue or nitpick or, like, logistically speaking, saving the people of Earth-38 is, like, noble and all, but shipping them all to Earth-1 or any other Earth seems very, like, short-sighted.
Right. Overpopulation problems.
Right. And by the way, there was literally no organization or planning in that evacuation procedure. It was, like, a hot mess. Like, everyone was, like, running around. I have no idea how they all got on the ships because it was just, like, ridiculously a hot mess. And then, like, Earth-1 also has its own billions of people. So if, like, Earth-38 has 7 billion people, I'm pretty sure Earth-1 probably has 7 billion people. So how the fuck is it supposed to take on an additional, like, 3 billion people from another Earth? And Earth-1 doesn't even know that there are multiple universes. They have no idea. So, like, all of a sudden, 2 billion aliens, because, you know, who wouldn't, like, ships start appearing in the sky with billions of people, you know, that's, like, aliens to Earth-1 people. So, like, how the fuck is it supposed to take on? There's no, like, alien immigration procedure on Earth-1 that we know of. So I'm just like, logistically, this makes no sense. You know, I'm glad that they felt like they superheroes have to save people, but, like, this is, like, not logistically possible. Yeah. And then, like, the whole, like, finally, Oliver's unnecessary, surprising, but unnecessary fucking death. Like, did he really think that this was the moment that he was supposed to die for Barry and Kara? Like, like, if I die unnecessarily staying on an Earth that's already dead, already done for, now Barry and Kara can't die. Like, they haven't even fought, they haven't even seen the Anti-Monitor yet. And Oliver's like, yeah, this is my time. Like, crisis hasn't even really started yet. And he's like, this must be the moment. And I'm like, no, it's not the moment. And because he died so unnecessarily in episode 1, we have what we get in episode 2. And then plus now, like, the crisis has to detour into reviving a dead man who chose to die. Mm. Yeah. And that, I mean, it was surprising. It was good from a surprising standpoint, but I think just the way that he died, yeah, he saved a couple more billion people, but, like, those billion people still died in the end anyway. And
we're not there yet. God.
We're not. I mean, we're not. But, I mean, like, that was such an unnecessary risk for him to take. Like, I can't imagine, like, this is the time. Like, I would assume that if you're dying in place of two other people, then it probably should be in a moment where those two other people are, look like they're about to die, and then you step in and do something. Not like it's time to go and no, I don't want to go. But that's just me. Go ahead, Tati.
My biggest issue, because I'm biased, but yeah, my biggest issue was probably Barry having, like, 5 lines. And I was like, it's not, I know it's the last episode, but it's, like, so disproportionate. You know, it's supposed to be a trinity or whatever. And Kara finally getting a plot is great. But Oliver didn't need as much plot as he got. And then Barry didn't even have another cast member to talk to, let alone anything to say or do in the episode. So I did not like that. I also, as much as... Actually, no, I just didn't like it. I didn't like that they went to that Earth whatever and they met that one Oliver who lost his Sarah. And then they had that scene. First off, I don't need to absolve this random Oliver of his sins. And second off, like, it wasn't any different from our Oliver. We've already gone through this with our Oliver. Plus, her weird speech about how on her Earth, going on the gambit with him launched a series of events that wound up with her being a superhero or whatever. I was like, okay. That literally has nothing to do with the other Sarah who died. She is dead. The fact that you are not dead does not absolve the fact that she is dead.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay. And also, before you became a cool superhero on the Wave Rider, you became a fucking assassin for the League of Assassins. So let's not. Also, Shadow died because of your ass. So no, this does not cancel out. So anyway, I was not into that. What else was I not into? I was not into the fact that I could see the future, and I knew that Oliver dying in this episode would lead to everyone obsessing about Oliver in future episodes, even though they should be focusing on the bigger thing, which is the crisis. And also, like you guys already said, his death. How did he shoot the monitor to make the monitor stop? How did the monitor not foresee this? I thought the monitor could see, like, all kinds of shit, and now it's only he doesn't know anything. Now it's just like, oh, he died then? Oh, Barry and Kara are doing this? This is so weird. Who are the Paragons? I don't know what's going on. So I now don't have faith in the monitor. He's useless. I also love your point. I didn't even think about it while watching, but you're totally right, Jess. Like, why didn't these other Earths get to fight for their Earth? Why didn't they get any preparation whatsoever? If we had even gotten one scene of the Monitor preparing a different Earth and then it's still going wrong, you know, that would work. Because I'm sure we can imagine the Monitor's been talking to everybody about this, right? He probably knows that everyone needs to be involved. But the whole thing with the seven Paragons, like only these seven people, I know that's not in this episode, but just the idea that like only seven people really are useful in the helping, you know, and only Earth One for the whole season and Earth 38 earlier this episode get preparation is stupid. So whatever. I don't know. I didn't like that. I also thought that the, I don't know. I think that by the time that Oliver died and was like, oh, I did it for you or whatever to Barry and Kara is when I was just like, they took the wind out of my sails for the future of the episodes. I was like, uh-oh. Because Barry was like immediately like, no, this is wrong. It can't be like this. And I was like, how have you been preparing for your death all season long?
You can't accept other person dying.
You can't accept Oliver's death. And also, how is it that y'all are Biffles and yet Oliver did not once think to tell you that he was going to die in crisis and you didn't once think to tell him that you were going to die in crisis? What's the point of even being on the same Earth if y'all don't, like, call each other to say something? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't they have banded together earlier on to potentially stop the crisis? Why would, like, it just calls into question, like, why would Oliver take this on himself? Why would Barry take this on himself? You literally have other heroes. You know the crisis is going to affect all Earths. Why wouldn't y'all hop over to Earth 38 and tell Kara? It makes no sense. The way that they prepare for this crisis is garbage. The second they learned about it, they should have been gathering all of their forces.
Yes.
And that includes calling the lead writer.
All the other ifs, like, exactly. Other Earths.
And,
like,
hopping to all the other Earths.
And then, yeah.
Exactly. Seeing what they can all, like, work on, develop, bringing Wally back from Timbuktu. Like, all these things should be happening, and none of it happened. They don't look like they prepared at all. And in fact, outside, like, I understand that they were busy trying to save Earth 38, which is something that they should have been doing in earlier episodes, right? Like, it's stupid that it took Lena, like, an hour to build this thing that's going to save the entire...
Yeah, that's not even, like, possible. Like, again, like, logistically.
Yeah. So it's just fake. Like, if they had been trying to work on that all season long and then finally Lena got it working, or, like, they got distracted because of the reveal and so Lena stopped working on it and then they got her to continue it or whatever, you know? Like, then that would make more sense than just, like, please, Lena, do this thing. Okay, I've done it. Great. Go me. So, whatever. That was silly. Something else relating to that. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to just echo the same thing, but Argo didn't learn anything from Krypton, and they still only have one pod. Like, how?
Only big enough for one baby.
What have they been
doing?
It's
not even, like, an adult-sized pod. Yeah.
What have they been doing with the rest of their time? I don't know. I hate it. It's just dumb. So yeah, I think those are my dislikes. I feel like even though it was, like, well paced, I had a lot of questions about the logistics, about the just, like, believability, and also the like, while I thought the physical stakes were really good, the emotional stakes were kind of depressed after a while. So yeah. Depressed, like, lowered, not like I'm really sad now. Okay. Batwoman, part two. Can the real Clark Kent please stand up? The group uses Ray, Ray's invention to track new recruits, aka Paragons, to help save the universe. I didn't mention that I was just glad he was in it, but there you go. The Monitor sends Iris, Clark, and Lois in search of a mysterious not-so-mysterious Kryptonian, while Lex Luthor tries to kill them all. And Kate and Kara head out to find Bruce Wayne, who is very broody and mean. In addition, Mia challenges Sarah to bring back Oliver, even though we don't need this in our lives. Rory discovers the hidden talent of shushing babies. And Lex Luthor uses the Book of Destiny to Wily ends. Laura Belzy directed the episode written by Don Whitehead and Holly Henderson. What sparked joy?
I think the thing that sparked the most joy in this part of the crossover were the team-ups, the dynamics. So you had, like, a lot of great, you had great West Allen. You had a lot of great Clois West. You had Smallville Clois. You've got Superbat. All of these, like, dynamics and team-ups outsold this episode. I feel like the monitor summoning Iris for her own mission with Clois allowed us to get some time for like a sweet like mini reunion between Barry and Iris, because he kind of like disappeared unexpectedly in the Supergirl episode. Like Lally just showed up and like, come here, and so he didn't really get to say anything. So it was nice in the beginning of this episode that we, you know, got that little reunion from Barry and Iris, and she could see like he was okay and like he didn't die in that 1 second that he left in Supergirl. So that was great. Barry, of course, like Barry was on some bullshit at the time, but I like that we got the first of what could be, what would be like mini crossover kisses between them. And just that they just seemed like really, the fact that their hug and he was really happy to see her and all that kind of stuff was great in the middle of this kind of like chaotic crisis situation they were in. The scene on the Wave Rider of the monitor trying to make this like really important speech and the team playing like hot potato with the baby because he kept crying was really funny. Particularly Kate, like not even trying to be fake and just like noping out of the situation when Kara tried to pass her the baby. So I really like, I thought that was funny, kind of a little bit of comedic moment to cut in between like the seriousness. So stop me if you heard this joke before. Two ace reporters and a Superman walk into a farm. Love that team up between Iris and Lois, and you know, Clark was also there. But basically, two reporters teaming up, and big part of like the cameo of not only Smallville's Clark but also Kingdom Come Superman finding like the lonely Kryptonian, aka Paragon of Truth, before like Lex killed him off. And I'm guessing that's basically Lex's role to play, to put some pressure on Clois West to find the right Superman before Lex kills them all. So you know, that works. I think that Iris and Lois had some really great chemistry together, and I liked a lot of Lois's one-liners. And I like Iris slash Candace being flustered by Bronnie Tal guy slash Beef Wellington was great. I like Smallville Clark's amusement at the whole thing. Like, he was just kind of like, I don't really know what's going on, but this is kind of funny. And then like Lex, especially when he was like confronted by Lex, and he's just like, who are you? Taking this little kryptonite rock and like throwing it away, like, you know, it felt like you know, like the incel nerd in high school that grew up to be a dick and like seeking revenge on like the jock that he feels destroyed his life and still getting his ass kicked. So that was great, seeing like Clark punch this Lex, and then Lex being like, you know what, I didn't even want to kill you anyway. Like, you know, it hurt him to not be able to like get a rise out of this Clark, but it was still funny.
The Luthers are so petty.
Yeah. I thought it was really great. Like, thank you, Iris, for pointing out that Kingdom Come Clark looks exactly like Ray Palmer later in the episode. And then like later in the episode, like Kara was actually confused when she was looking at Kal-El and be like, man, you're a jacked, right? And he's like, that's your cousin. It's like, oh, okay. Because like, if they had not pointed it out, it's not realistic. You've got Brandon Ruth playing two different characters. Like, someone has to point it out. So I like that they pointed it out. Love that Kate and Kara last year, I felt like their dynamic was criminally underutilized in that crossover. So I love that this year we're getting a whole lot more of them, and it's spread out over a couple different episodes. So it continues on in the Batwoman episode. And especially with like Kate being, when she likes you, when she actually likes you, she's kind of like that ride or die kind of friend. So she has to decide she likes you first, but like, she definitely was sticking up for Kara. She trusted Kara immediately in the Supergirl episode with, you know, the fact that these people are friends, not foes. And then in this episode, like, she can kind of like, she can see Kara's not really fine, and so she invites Kara to help her, but also kind of to keep an eye on her and hope that she's safe. And like, she immediately was not fucking with Lex as soon as Kara made it clear that she didn't fuck with Lex. So like, she's like that, you know, that friend that is just like on your side. And I like that she was on Kara's side and wanting to support her. Like the trip to, I guess, was this Batman like E99, Earth 99. It was like a Batman Beyond reference. This is like Batman Beyond World with old Bruce, and it was super dark. I was not expecting that kind of Bruce, like him to be that jaded and that, like, bad. But I did like the Superbat solidarity that we got out of that. Also, Carl Luke 2020, thank you. Please and thank you.
Oh, that was so great.
Like, when she opened the door, and I even like Ruby Rose's like reaction to it, because she's like that what's that white guy that did like the blinking like no gif, that was like her face, and it was like hilarious. And I like Kara's record of being attracted to dark skin black man stays intact. She thought Luke was cute. We don't count the blip in the radar name on L, because even Kara admitted that she had lost her mind when she dated him, so like I'm like, forget that. But I thought that was really, really nice moment. I feel like Ruby can be like unintentionally funny sometimes. Like, I don't know if she's trying, but she, like her, like little reactions to that was like really funny. And then as a side note, while it was annoying, the storyline was annoying to watch and it'll be in my dislikes. It did spark enormous joy for me that Mia Smoke annoyed so many casual and non-Arrow / Flash fans. It's like, yes, vindication. Other people, they're just annoying. Like, these are people that don't even watch the Flash, like Supergirl stands. That only watch Supergirl, or you know, like other shows that not or don't have like the whole bitter Flash Arrow rivalry or whatever. It was like, why is she so annoying? I was like, yes, thank you. Thank you for vindicating my opinion. So yeah.
They now feel our pain.
They do. I'm glad.
Yeah. Are those all your likes, Madhir?
Yeah, those are all my likes.
Yeah. Most of my joys in this episode were like the little things, like you said, Jess, because the rest of it was a mess. Kara and Kate's friendship. I love that they went together to find Earth 99 Bruce, and that we got Kevin Conroy. And I know he was really kind of nervous about playing like a live action version of Batman, but I think he did a great job.
The voice.
So that was really great. And I love the nod to Batman Beyond, and that this was kind of Kate's mission, because this was like the Batwoman episode, and it was her mission to prove that she was the paragon of courage and not Bruce.
She didn't even know it. Yeah.
And she didn't know it. And it was great because it kind of, there's like that joke, or I guess it's canon, that in was another world, or basically that Batman has ways to kill all of the Justice League members or something like that.
Yeah, Justice League United, I think, or something.
Yeah,
like one
so
of the
this was that. Versus, this was yeah. that Bruce. but like him going all the way and actually murdering Superman, it was super dark. But at the same time, it was nice to see that she, because she's looked up to Bruce for so long. Like that's the premise of the show. Is like she's writing these journals entries to Bruce all the time. So I felt it was like nice for her to come back from, you know, thinking that Bruce is like this angel who's on a pedestal all the time, and to
angel.
See how
not he's ever called that.
right. But like in her eyes, he's like this great hero, you know? So I guess it was like to see someone get knocked down a peg, or to see at least like how dark someone could get. And I hope that is gets reflected in her show. Like she takes that back with her, because I feel like tonally, I don't know, this was still Batwoman, but tonally this Kate felt different in a good way. She felt like a lot less broody, a lot less dark, you know, even though the multiverse was ending, she was also a little bit of a source of hope in a lot of ways. So I don't know what's going on there, but I like it. And also, Kate, you know, Kara's reactions to Luke, she was really thirsty. And Luke was being extra for some reason, but I loved it. He would just like show up like it was like some, you know, rom-com or some romance movie.
He was
like, I don't
evil.
Know what's happening. Yeah, but that was fun. And then of course Iris and Barry getting to have a moment, which was unexpected because it's been so dry on the Flash. But you know, because Barry was being super pissy towards the monitor like right in the previous scene, but his whole demeanor calmed when he was like hugging Iris, which was very heart melting, and there, I'm glad you're here made me very soft, warmed my cold heart. I loved it even more that whoever was tweeting from the Batwoman writers account shipped West Allen. So that was fun. And then obviously like when they went to find Kingdom Come Superman, and that since it was like the Superman Returns Superman, they had that little Jason nod, like, oh yeah, I have a son named Jason. Cause in that movie they found out like he had a son with Lois and it was Jason Kent. So that was like a little Easter
okay,
egg.
I was gonna say that for my predictions. Go ahead.
And then all of Iris's interactions with Beef Wellington. That was really fun.
Beef Wellington.
Yes. Lex being like super petty that he used the Book of Destiny to kill Superman is very on brand. But I loved Smallville Clark being like, yeah, I haven't missed these chats. And then Lois thinking Clark talking about the multiverse was like him making a funny after all of these years. Like he was actually joking and she was so shocked. But I love that Clovis got their happy ending because that's all I really cared about.
I forgot to mention, I like that they have two daughters too.
Yeah, it was super sweet. But then also a nice Easter egg was like Lex, he said that Lex was president. Like, I didn't think the president made house calls, which was like what happened at the end of Smallville. Like when they flash forward 7 years, like Lex was becoming president. So that was nice. And then, yeah, so Clovis West, all that stuff, even though Tyler Hoechlin's Clark didn't really get that much to do. I love that we had Lois and Iris interact a lot and them trying to save or rewrite the Book of Destiny to some degree to stop Kingdom Come Superman from killing the other Superman. All of that was wonderful. And I just feel like in terms of like the character stuff for these specific characters, it was really nice to, it was really enjoyable to watch. Like otherwise the episode was kind of dull, but those were the shining moments.
I agree with that. I do think it was a collection of enjoyable scenes rather than a well-crafted part of the crisis. So, of course, I really loved that Barry and Iris got a moment. I think they even got a kiss in this episode, which I was, like, blown away by. And I loved that Iris got her own little mission and that she got to spend an extended amount of time with Lois and Clark's. But especially just enjoy the, you know, the ace reporters going at it together. I loved the visit to Smallville. It was just so much fun, like you guys said, to see Clark face off with that Lex and kind of be like, you're now Michael Rosenbaum. And also for Lex not to need to destroy him because he doesn't even have his powers. I love when he punched him, though, and he was like, oh, still stronger. Like, I don't have powers, but I'm still stronger than you.
I love Lois's comment that he was, like, the brawny man from those, like, paper towels or whatever.
Oh, yes. And I thought it was kind of cute that, like, they were, because I guess it's because he was currently Clark, not Superman, maybe. I don't know why. But it was, like, kind of funny how they kept, like, making our Clark, like, Tyler Hoechlin's Clark, kind of, like, somehow small in comparison to these other Supermen. You know, the brawny muscle.
Oh my god, yeah. Because he, like, apparently, according to Google, like, Tyler Hoechlin is, like, 6 foot, which I kind of feel like is a lie. Like, I feel like, compared to Tom and Brandon, yeah, like, he looked like he was, like, 5'9".
Right.
He's not that much taller than Candace, so I don't see how he was 6 foot.
Yeah, but either way, like,
5'10", at least, like, at max.
They definitely were, like, openly suggesting that, you know, the Smallville Superman and the Brandon Routh, you know, whatever, Superman Returns,
Kal-El
were, like, superior specimens to Tyler. It's kind of funny, like, it kind of put him in, like, the Barry position, even though, obviously, physically, he does not have this issue. But it does kind of, like, make him more relatable in a way, or, like, more, you know, whatever, fun, I guess, if you will. And it does distinguish between Clark and Superman as well. So I very much, I enjoyed all those interactions. And I especially love when Lois came out, because I was a little worried that we were only going to get Erica Durance as Allura, and then we wouldn't see her come out as Lois, because it was just taking so long. I was like, what? Where is she? But then she came out. And I love that, first off, that they let Clark get rid of his powers, which is something that Clark wanted the whole time he was on Smallville. Like, I wish I didn't have these powers and have to be Superman. So he got what he wanted, that he had two daughters with Lois, and that he chose, in the face of, you know, the world ending, the universe ending, to not even, like, not even bring it up, and not, you know, he wasn't, like, spending his time, like, wishing that he had had the powers, that he could go do something, or getting them back or whatever. He just, like, went in with his wife and his daughters to, like, play whatever board game or watch whatever drawing that they had done.
Clean up
the mess they made, etc. So I was like, I felt like that was fitting for his character. And I liked that it kind of echoed Ryan and Iris's conversation in the next one, you know, in the next episode. Just because, like, that's, like, what Ryan wanted to do, right? And Iris was like, no, you can't do that. You have to do this. But Clark got to do that. So, so yeah. I don't know. I liked it. Anyway, Brandon Ralph, speaking of, Brandon as Superman, he was excellent. He, like, it just proves that he was born to play Superman. He is a great Clark. It's just that Superman Returns was a shitty movie and didn't give him the spotlight that he deserved. Didn't give him the lines, didn't give him, you know, the writing period, didn't give him the Lois he deserved. So anyway.
Tragic.
Yeah. So as much as I don't like Kingdom Come as a story, or I don't like any situation in which Lois has to be murdered for Superman to be sad about shit, I did really enjoy his performance, and I liked how they incorporated a Superman versus Superman fight.
Someone said in Tumblr that they expected it to be like darker than it was, or more serious than it was, and they were a little bit disappointed by that. But I was like, you know, I feel like if I get that, but then also they went so dark with Kingdom Come Batman, and they also wanted to use Cal in the rest of the crossover, that I think that it worked out the level of like seriousness or whatever, yeah. And the Superman side worked out. Because if it was even any like darker, if it was like Batman dark, then I don't even know how they would correct that in time for Cal to be useful for the rest of the crossover.
No, exactly. I totally agree. I mean, in fact, I was about to say I liked the balance, because I liked that we see two broken versions of Superman and Batman, and yet then we see the differences, right? We see how Clark has picked himself back up, how Clark still has hope, you know, and how he is willing to go off and fight for a greater cause, despite having lost everything himself. And then you've got Batman, you've got Bruce, who has turned into a paranoid, xenophobic murderer. Yeah, exactly. So for me, like, that made sense and was well done. And also, Batman always teeters on the edge of that. You know what I mean? He's always been like a kind of, you know, like brooding character, a paranoid man, someone who like beats up poor people for a living. So, yeah. So anyway, speaking of Batman, Kevin Conroy, that's how you do an old man Batman, even though he was a warped, evil old man Batman. Other people playing old man Batman should take notes. yeah, he was excellent. I loved the dynamic that, you know, the scenes that we saw with Kate. And also I loved how for this episode, even though Kara was the paragon of hope, she was the one who had kind of given up hope, who was kind of like feeling dejected by what had happened to her, of course, understandably so, and to Oliver, who is her friend, whereas Kate doesn't really give a fuck about Oliver, who is Oliver to her. And also she's like, has hope that this Bruce is going to turn out right, and he's going to be the paragon, whatever, that she can like help him, blah, blah, blah. So it was interesting to see their kind of like role reversals in that way, but Kara was still, you know, right to be suspicious of him as well as to be suspicious of the monitor. So yeah, I don't know. I really like their dynamic. I like how Kara and Kate have become friends. They already kind of did in the last crossover, but we really see it develop in this crossover. And I really hope we get many crossovers with them in the future where they get to come into each other's shows. Cause they have a really nice bond. So yeah, I liked how they kind of snuck in a Superman versus Batman fight, in the background of that story, and how I guess no one said their mom's name was Martha in that fight. So it ended very poorly for Superman.
anyway, that is canon.
Yes. So yeah, all that stuff was great. I'm trying to remember what else happened in the minimal, like the minor stuff. Did we already get to? Did Constantine show up in this episode?
No, he did not. He showed up in. No, yes, he did. Actually, he did. Because that's when they're trying to like bring him to the pit. Yeah, so he was.
Matt Ryan is Constantine. He's the Constantine. I love him. He's so great. I was so excited to see Constantine. Even though he's already in Legends, it's not like it's a surprise that he showed up, but he just has that energy, you know? He always brings some joy to his scenes, some sardonic joy. So yeah, it was nice to see Sarah kind of reach out to him and ask for his help and him to be his usual self. Also, Mick, I like this Earth Mick. this was the baby one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And Snart as
Gideon. Yeah. Snart as Gideon. Snart the Gideon is
nice to meet a fan.
Yeah, exactly. I loved that. That was great. I kind of want to see more of that Legends, although I think it's just them now, so maybe not.
Yeah, but I think all the other ones retired.
Yeah, but it's still funny that he's the last one standing. Like, that's the last thing you'd expect. But I guess with Snart as his Gideon, where else is he going to go? So yeah,
that's
I like
us
that.
With Legends. We're like, what is Mick doing? Why is he there? And they're like, well, he's the last one to leave.
Yep.
That's it.
Maybe like the actual Legends finale.
Exactly. That was like sitting in our face. Like, we know you want Mick gone, but fuck you. He's always going to be here. Anyway. Okay. So what did we not like? What did not spark joy?
I think overall, compared to like the first hour, this one was like weaker. Like the plots seemed to stretch out and take up a lot of space while nothing was really happening. And like, you know, it's not really a dislike because I love seeing them together. So, but for example, like the Clovis West storyline, Iris and Lois are present, but they don't actively get a lot to do. They just do like a lot of like standing around and like the whole sequence when it's Kal-El versus Clark fighting in like the air, and you know, a lot of it is just Lois and Iris like looking out the window like, oh my god, what's gonna happen, instead of like actually like fighting Lex for the book. It took like a long time for that to happen, and you know, at the end it was just like Lois finally knocking out Lex and then having to convince Kal-El to like remember the love instead of, you know, actually like changing it through the book. So I'm kind of like, why did Monitor ask Iris? Like, I'm not complaining. Like, I'm glad that we got good content, but I feel like it could have been more from the two reporters specifically working as a duo, or, you know, covering a story about the crisis. And I don't know.
Right.
But like, I realized like, I like what we got because I like seeing them in the same like frame and be like, yes, two reporters. But I don't know. I feel like it could have been like deeper, more to it than it was. So that was like kind of like a nitpick to scenes that I liked. But I realized like all the episodes can't be high intensity throughout because you need like some breaks in between here and there. But also I think because it like comprised my least favorite storyline, aka like the underutilization of Barry Allen, that it made it worse. And then like all the others were kind of space fillers, so it felt like more fillery than I think it should have felt. Barry spent the last 6 episodes not fighting his death, preparing other people for his death, getting mad at Sisko for being mad that Barry was going to die, to get to Crisis and not respect Oliver's death and team up with Mia to do what he almost broke up with Sisko over. So
yep,
it's just like a complete like 180 reversal of Barry's mentality, and it just made no sense. Like Mia being upset and wanting to play with death and wanting to play with demons makes sense because she's a child. She's Oliver's child specifically. It's her dad that died. She wants to be mad. She wants to like, she has no other stakes or responsibility in this crossover other than her dad. So she wants to like try and raise Oliver from the dead and Sarah as her babysitter, because Sarah was also raised from the dead. That's fine. They can do that. Go off and do that. But Barry has a whole ass crisis to continue to worry about. And instead he takes an entire detour to do something that will absolutely not change the conclusion of Crisis anyway. Like bringing one man back is not going to change fucking Crisis. And Barry knows that he has, like, you have your own death to worry about. Like, what are you doing? You still have to die, sir. Nothing has changed for you. So why is he, like, getting pissy with the monitor and about, like, Oliver dying and not accepting this when you just spent the last 6 episodes or 8 episodes dealing with a villain who also did not respect his destiny to die? And you were, like, seeing, like, the consequences of that. You had to tell him about that. You had to prepare your friends and not spend time with your wife or your family because you were preparing everybody else for your death. Let him die. Oliver chose to die. Let him die and do what you have to do. You don't stop a crisis. The crisis is not stopping for you to mourn Oliver at this moment. Like, do that afterwards. Like, not during the middle of it when he could have been out. Like, he could have been part of Clovis and Iris' storyline. Like, we'd have like a less Iron and Clovis pair up because they definitely needed help, like going across millions of Earths to find one fucking Superman. Like, you could have been more useful over there instead of like playing with demons. We don't do that, Barry. Like, what are you doing? So like that whole thing was just like a ridiculous waste of time. And then in the next episode, we get Diggle in that episode in that storyline anyway. Diggle, they could have brought in Diggle for this. Bring in Diggle and let Diggle go around and playing with demons and try and raise him from the Lazarus pit and all that shit. Like, Barry had other more important things he could have been doing, or he could have been utilized in a more important way, since he's supposed to be a very important part of the crisis, and they just did not do that, you know? So that was probably... That's the only other plot in this episode, basically, and it's the one that I just did not like. I felt like every other plot had really nice moments and, you know, different things that actually was, it was maybe still filler, or if it was like felt slow, but it was still moving the plot forward. This did nothing other than bring, and then like the fact that Barry was like still like stressed out when Oliver came back without his soul, I'm like, no fucking shit. That's what they told you was going to happen anyway. So I feel like in that moment, Barry realized, like, oh my God, I just wasted an entire fucking storyline bringing back a man and not even getting a soul. So that was basically that plot in a nutshell. The end.
Yeah, I agree. And for in terms of me, with what was ridiculous about this specific thing with Barry is that, like, you want to save Oliver so bad from the dead. You could have been trying to save your daughter from the dead by trying to conceive her in 6 8.
Right?
But you weren't doing that.
Oh my God.
What you could have had.
So throw the whole thing away. Whatever. Anyway, Jonah Hex being a creep to Mia was unnecessary. I did not like that. I don't even like Mia. Well, but
he was a creep, right?
He was what?
He was always a creep, right?
Yeah, even but it just felt creepier here because she's so young. And it was weird. And then, yeah, again, Barry's subplot. It was being wasted on Oliver. Like you said, he was preparing his team. He tried to stop Sisko from saving him. And then Barry goes to other Earth to try and save Oliver. Like, it's all hypocritical. He's dying. And that's what he wants to spend his last minutes doing. Like, make it make sense. And then what was really frustrating about it, too, was besides all the Barry stuff, which you mentioned, like, if they were going to spend the whole episode trying to resurrect Oliver immediately after he died, why did you kill him to begin with?
Just shock value.
Yeah, but then, like, we knew he was going to die. So it just felt like it was dragged out. And I don't get why Sarah didn't fight harder knowing Oliver wouldn't want to be resurrected by way of Lazarus Pit. Like,
yeah.
You had the Lazarus Pit in Arrow for like 8 seasons. She experienced it. Thea experienced it. They all had the bloodlust. They've been trying to destroy them for a reason. So it just felt like, what was the point? Like, did you not learn your lessons? It's only okay to use it to bring back people you love, but not anybody else. Like, that makes no sense. And then
she even tried to bring back her own fucking sister.
Right. So, but Oliver is the one savior of mankind, the Jesus, you know, he needs to be saved. So the whole subplot stalled everything else in the episode. And I feel like that was the main reason the whole episode felt disjointed, because it kept like we had a lot of other things going on, and then we just cut back to them with Constantine trying to, you know, get Oliver back, and it made the episode feel really like the pacing was off. Basically, Oliver sucked up oxygen even when he wasn't breathing, and that feels like a waste when a crisis is happening. Like, where at least show the other Earths being destroyed. There was no urgency here, especially after what happened with Earth 38.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how I felt about it. This episode was very much kind of spinning the wheels, just like running in place until we got to like the next big event in the crossover. Like, just the fact that it took until now for the monitor to be like, hey, there's going to be some paragons that we're going to look up. Why don't we take our time, take time out of our precious lives to find them now while Earths are already imploding and ceasing to exist, and while Lex has already taken the Book of Destiny in order to try to murder a bunch of Supermen, just seemed like a total waste. I don't know why the monitor wouldn't have done this in advance. And also, I don't know why the show chose to kill off Oliver in the first episode when the rest of the episodes would be dedicated to bringing Oliver back, as if he was the most important member of the multiverse, when he isn't even a paragon himself. Like, okay. So yeah, I mean, for like you already said, like, for Mia to try to get her dad back makes total sense. But for Barry and Sarah to be a part of that and to help with that is just stupid. Like, Sarah started off with a strong, like, no, this is a bad idea, but then she's like, okay, you've convinced me. It's a great idea. I'm like, okay.
Like,
what?
If she was just like pretending in order to like coach Mia to accept Oliver's death while pretending like she was going along with it, that would have been one thing, but that was not the thing.
No. So instead, she just flip-flopped for whatever reason, because Oliver is most important and we just love him so much. So yeah, it really was a waste. It really brought down the urgency, and it really made it seem like the crisis is just, like, not that big a deal, that we can't just put Oliver on hold. Is his soul gonna rot? Like, why can't we just wait until it's over? Just put his body in a fucking freezer and then bring his soul back after the crisis. The crisis is only gonna last, like, an hour. Come on. So, yeah, I don't know. It was very dumb. But also, yeah, the whole search for Paragons in and of itself seemed a little silly, like, in terms of the Monitor's, like, plans and the way that he had it play out. Like, why did you need Lex to go around killing Superman in order to find the right Paragon of Superman? Like, wouldn't it have been the same just to go and find Superman? Like,
he could have also zapped them all onto the ship if he wanted to.
Yeah, like, it's just stupid. And then, like, why did you need Kate to go to that Earth, whatever Earth that was,
to find her courage?
Exactly! Like, she hasn't already been courageous all of her damn life? Like, what are you talking about? She did not need to do that at all. There was no reason for that. To, like, make her think that the Paragon was a Bruce, and then it's like, ha, it was you all along. Psych. So, that was silly. And then, not to mention that they had poor Ray out there building this Paragon device. So, if we'd all just waited and done something more useful while he built the Paragon device, then we would have gotten all the Paragons when he was done. We didn't have to go on this.
He built a Paragon device, by the way.
Oh, and we completely forgot, like, the Pariah disappeared this episode.
Oh, yeah. He
showed up briefly and then disappeared.
Yeah, he came in last episode to be like, oh, my God, everything is horrible. I've been witnessing disaster. And then we never see him witness any disaster.
Yeah.
He just goes away. Like, the way, I've already said this, but the way they did Pariah was just such a disgrace. I would have much rather seen, like, first off, it was very confusing because Oliver was in the midst of crisis this whole season. But Pariah didn't open the door to crisis until the very last episode of Flash before the crisis. And there was no explanation that those timelines did not coincide. So it looks to the naked eye like the crisis was just already ongoing, and what Pariah did was just make it faster. But that's not the case. Oliver's season doesn't start until Pariah opens the door. So, whatever.
That's so weird. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, because that doesn't even make sense, like, chronologically. Exactly. And there's other stuff that doesn't make sense. And then, like, I feel like, you know, with it's when they announced, when Eric announced it at the Comic-Con that Tom was supposed to be Pariah, he's like, ooh, and everyone's like, who the fuck is Pariah? But,
and he made it even more confusing by calling him Nash Wells the whole time.
Yeah, the way that he made it seem like, it seemed like, and from the comics, like, Pariah is a huge part of the, you know, the storyline. And so the fact that Tom, for whatever reason, like, he's completely unnecessarily shoved into plots in other seasons, but the one time that he needs to be shoved into a plot, he's, like, nowhere to be found.
Yeah. Make it make sense. So, yeah, that was bad. And then, of course, another episode where Barry does barely anything, but more in Oliver, except for his one nice scene with Iris. It's just, again, like, it makes it seem like he's, like, the least important hero in the grand scheme of things. Even, I mean, obviously, and then here's a fact. Like, yeah, it was a Batwoman episode, so Kate got something to do, thank God. But the only other Batwoman character in the Batwoman episode is Luke. Like, weird, evil, shirtless version of Luke. Like, what? Where is everyone else? Why couldn't we have gotten just a glimpse of them in this other universe? You know, even something like, I mean, first off, I don't remember if Birds of Prey was in this episode or in the Flash episode.
I think it was in Flash.
It was the Flash episode.
Okay,
yeah.
But Rachel Skarsten was in Birds of Prey.
Oh, yeah.
And yet she wasn't in that little clip.
Ah.
What?
That makes no sense.
So, anyway, so if you're not going to have her in the Batwoman episode, at least have her as a Birds of Prey character. But whatever. So yeah, I don't understand. Like, it was, like, the least Batwoman episode of Batwoman. It was only Batwoman because Batwoman was there, and we finally saw a Bruce. Not her Bruce, but a Bruce. So we got to know something about her Bruce, because she was like, my Bruce wouldn't do that. Okay, we learned something. Moving on. So yeah, I didn't like that. I would have accepted something, because the way that Supergirl did it was really good, you know? We got some continuity, and then the rest of it was the cameos. And this is just like, well, Batwoman is here, So it's a Batwoman episode. Congrats. Anything else? Anything else? Just, yeah, I mean, overall, I felt like it stopped the flow and it made the crisis seem like not a very big deal. And there's, like,
there's a lot of standing around the ship not really doing much.
Exactly. Where could have been more, especially, like, we just spent, like, the end of the last episode, like, trying to save an Earth and failing and trying to, like, you know, protect, guard the quantum towers. And then this episode, it just feels like, oh, well, we didn't save that Earth. Moving on. We've just got these extra 3 billion people in stasis, and a bunch of Earths are probably just disappearing at alarming rate, but it's cool. We'll just wait until it's just us left. So, whatever. Anyway, with that being said, shall we move into the Flash crisis?
Yeah.
All right.
Titled Hope Cuts Through /333.
All right. The Flash! Black Lightning joins the Arrowverse in the third chapter of the crossover. Pariah enlists Black Lightning to help stop the Anti-Monitor, despite not letting Black Lightning be a Paragon, which he absolutely should. Mm-hmm. After, Flash 90 shares what he learned from his battle in Elseworlds, which is that he just gotta keep on running. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. With the help of Black Lightning, Barry, Cisco, and Killer Frost, I don't remember her doing anything, come up with a plan that could save them all. Meanwhile, Iris has a heart-to-heart with Ryan Choi, while Oliver and Diggle return to an old familiar stomping ground, a.k.a. Lian Yu, a.k.a. Purgatory, because Lian Yu means purgatory. Get it? Get it?
Wow.
David McWhorter directed the episode with story by Eric Wallace and teleplay by Lauren Cherto and Sterling Gates. I've seen people be confused about this. Story means Eric Wallace said this stuff should happen. And teleplay means Lauren Cherto and Sterling Gates wrote the dialogue and the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Lauren Cherto and Sterling Gates. Sit down, Eric Wallace. Okay. What sparked joy?
Oh, man. Go ahead.
Oh, me? Okay. This episode, I think, was the best written out of the three so far. It was not as high intensity as episode one, but it had better placed plots in episode two. So I think it was kind of like the best of both worlds. Hands down, Lucifer cameo on Earth 666 was the best so far. That whole scene of like Constantine, Mia, and Diggle meeting Lucifer outside of a bar. Sounds like another joke. Constantine, Mia, and Diggle meet the devil outside of a bar. But that whole interaction was like really great writing. I liked that, so that was great. I liked that Barry was actually in the action in this episode, and that Wes Allen's love was connected throughout the story. So here we got a continuation of like Wes Allen being like a united married couple, and that their plots or their scenes together were like the heart of the momentum behind other scenes, other main really important plots in like the episode. So they were very much the gold standard couple here, and we got like 3 kisses, I think, although I feel like one was like the same kiss twice, like in that the goodbye scene where he's like, we first see just her saying like, you really want me to go after Ryan Choi, and then they kiss, and I feel like, I don't know, I can't remember, but I don't know if it was,
but
like
we when saw we saw it the twice.
Yeah, we saw the same kiss twice. Yes, we saw, that's what counts. Anyway, so I like that we got that. I like that every time that they see each other, like, yes, like, this is, because literally it's, like, almost, like, every time they leave each other, it's like, this could be the last time I see you. And so when they come back, it's a really nice reunion every time. Ryan Choi is adorable, little paragon of humanity. I really liked his introduction. That he was like geeking out over like Ray Palmer, and then like he was just like, oh, I'm just like a little human, what am I supposed to do? This is like huge. It's like, if it's this crazy, I want to be with my family. And him kind of like understandably being like, I can't deal with this. I don't know what, I just want to be with my wife and child if the end of the world is actually coming. Which is really like relatable. And I thought his heart to heart with Iris was really moving because of that, because she can also like really relate. They feel like they're really like connected with each other as like teen civilian members. I, mere mortal, do to make a difference. And I feel like a lot, basically like a lot of fandom always shits on the civilians within like the universe, they've shit on Iris for years because she doesn't have any powers. But basically, like, Iris and Ryan are like the same boat, and the fact that there is a paragon of humanity, and the paragon of humanity is like a normal person, I think adds a lot to the idea that regular people can do like extraordinary things. And, you know, like, Ryan had a very like human reaction to wanting to be with his wife and daughter at the end. And I feel like that connected to Iris so much because that's exactly what she wants to do. She would have loved to have been with Barry, but she was able to inspire Ryan because believing in fighting anyway, even against what seems like impossible odds, is her superpower. And it speaks so much to, like I said, that idea that, you know, you don't really have to have superpowers or a super suit to be a superhero. And I like how that in like followed up by the flashback of her full conversation with Barry, who, like, for Barry, he's like a literal superhero, but his superhero is Iris. And it's just kind of great. Like, he is just so much in awe of her and like what she can do, even though, you know, I don't think she recognizes it herself sometimes. Like, his belief in her is like that strong. And I also thought it was really nice that in this crossover alone, Iris has been like directly connected to three of the seven paragons: truth, love, and humanity. Because she was with Clovis to find paragon of truth. She's married to the paragon of love, and then she is like the main person responsible for recruiting the paragon of humanity. And I love how all three of these paragons really basically describe like her greatest attributes. So it's like really fitting. Aww. For that. Yeah. Elsewhere in this crossover episode, like, Kara and Kate's storyline was also like really intense. You know, and I like that it's consistently very front and center in this crossover. I feel like ever since they came back from Earth 99 in part 2, and like Kate opened her hand, and we saw the kryptonite front that she got from Bruce. And I was like, why do you have that, Kate? What are you gonna do, Kate? What do you have the kryptonite? And then, like, in this episode, again, she's like looking at it, like, oh my god, like, what's gonna happen? Like, why do you still have this, Kate? No more lies. Kara can't handle lies because that's what got her in her situation in the first place in her episode. And, like, you know, like, the fact that, like, she was, like, low-key threatening Kara at one point to take her down. And I feel like it was the most, like, acting Ruby has ever acted. Because it was, like, really intense. I was, like, really nervous. Like, what's going to happen? Like, please don't, like, we're going to have, like, super bad showdown and crisis. Are we really going to do that? But I'm glad it didn't, like, lead to an actual fight, though. And that, like, Kate came clean about having the kryptonite, and Kara wasn't mad about it. And I feel like, I can't remember the exact dialogue, but they are both bringing up each other's paragons. And so, you know, Kate was like, I hope that I'm going to give this to you, because I'm just going to hope that you don't turn to the book. And Kara's like, you keep it and have the courage to use it if you need to, you know, whatever. So it was, like, really nice, like, balancing them, acknowledging each other's paragons and respects that they have for each other and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I really liked that. Yeah, and then Jefferson coming into it all, I feel like they convinced him way too quickly. Like, I'm sorry, your family's dead, but we need you. And he's like, okay. but I liked, especially in the aftermath of, well, first of all, I liked Earth 90 Flash zapping Barry's powers to take on his destiny of dying, because I feel like that's probably what should have happened. And I like that there was an explanation for where he went elsewhere, because I was really like pissed off that in last year's crossover, Monitor's just like poof, and then he was gone. He was like, well, I guess he's dead now. But I like that it was explained that, you know, instead of like going wherever, he was diverted, and he's been here running ever since. So I really liked that. And his last words or whatever, to, like, continue to ride the lightning sun. It was very like father son moment, and seeing that, knowing that is basically John Wesley Shipp and Grant and you know, like Henry Allen. It's another like father son parallel. So it was really nice to see that, and a little callback to the actual show. But then afterwards, like, Barry and Jefferson having their talk and really connecting, and they're two people that you probably wouldn't think on, like, if you didn't watch The Flash or you didn't watch Black Lightning, like, how do these two people connect or, you know, what kind of pair is this? But then they talk about how both of them have been in situations where their father was like murdered, and the how they've had to come up out of that to be like the men that they are today, and how they really connected on that level. It was really great and shows that they really are like a really good pair. And then of course afterwards, like the black man head nod between Jefferson and Diggle's like, yep. and like at the end when everybody is like disappearing and like Barry reaches out for Iris, and that was like another like, you know, reunion kind of like iconic moment. And at the end when they get to the vanishing point and like all the Paragons are there, and then suddenly like stuff starts happening to Kal-El, and I'm like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden it's like Lex, and she that he rewrote himself as a Paragon just because he didn't want to die and he just wanted to stick it to Superman. That was so fucking mad, but it was such a good twist for the end of like the cliffhanger. So it was a very good cliffhanger, but it was so like frustrating. I'm like, God damn it, Lex. But yeah. Really good episode.
I definitely agree that it was the strongest of the three. I think that it was emotional. It had stakes. It was much more evenly paced than episode two. But yeah, it didn't have as much urgency as them trying to save the Earth, because a lot of the action did take place in like specific locations and we didn't get to see everything that was going on, but it still had like a major impact. And I especially loved, I think Jefferson Pierce really, like, this is why we've always thought that Black Lightning should cross over with the Flash specifically, because I mean this episode kind of solidified that that reason. And then I feel like he fit in seamlessly into the crossover, because he kind of showed up immediately after what happened to his Earth in Black Lightning, and he showed up, he was really confused, and he got a chance, even though it wasn't long enough, to be confused and upset that his family disappeared because he didn't know what was going on, but he did set his feelings aside to help them stop the, was it like the, I can't even remember, I feel like I need to watch parts of this episode, but to stop what was going on.
the antimatter wave, yes. Canon.
Right.
Thank you. And it was like really beautiful and gut-wrenching. And then him being annoyed in general, but having that lovely conversation with Barry about what their dads taught them, and that, you know, Jefferson said that they didn't raise any quitters. And that Barry bonded with him by using the quote Jefferson often repeated was really nice too. Or at least like knowing it. And then there was Ryan Choi, who is an angel. And I have theories about him, but he is I see a little bit how he was the Paragon of Humanity, and I love that he is like, he's like what everybody thinks. He's like, why should I bother if the world is ending? Like, I don't need to be here, you know? And it's probably what fans wanted Barry to act like for, in right. 6A. It's like, yeah, well, I'm gonna go hang out with my wife and baby, and we're just gonna chill until, you know, the antimatter just makes us disappear.
Hang out with my wife and make my baby.
Yes. So he was great. I love that he was like sitting there fanboying over Ray Palmer, which is really cute. And that
I like that Ralph thought he was somebody. He was like, yeah.
Oh, speaking of Ralph, Ralph was like, oh, hello, you know, and Cliff Ross is like, yeah, this is, don't mind him, this is his first crossover, because it actually was. So that was really funny. But back to Ryan Choi, I also love that he bonded with Iris, or like Iris was the one to reach out to him because of everything Jess said, basically about like humans also being superheroes, like they have a purpose too, and it's not just that I can flash this or I can, you know, throw arrows and whatever.
Battering.
Yeah, so it's like there's more to people than just what their abilities show you. You know, they have intelligence and they have all of that stuff, so it's nice that Ryan as a human and Iris as a human could bond over those things. And the fact that one of the Paragons was one of humanity, and that he didn't actually have any powers or strength like Sarah does and abilities and things like that, just goes to show you that there needs to be a balance with all of these supers running around. Mm-hmm. And then E90 Flash, it was really nice to have him back as well. I was really surprised actually to see him running on the cosmic treadmill. Like, poor guy hasn't gotten a break for like a year. He must be super exhausted. But what I really loved is that he actually sacrifice himself for Barry. He knew the stakes. He's been doing this for a very long time. And it was like, even though we didn't see our Barry die, we did see him die in the, like, back in episode 2, technically. So there was like that shot of him disappearing. And then in this episode, it was like a callback to the comics as well. The fact that, like, Flash was trying his hardest to hold back the Anti-Monitor, essentially. And then we had that nice little nod to the show where he sees Tina before he disappears. It was really nice. I thought it was like a good send-off for him. I loved... I don't watch Lucifer, but as soon as I saw Earth 66, I was like, oh shit, Lucifer's going to show up. And that man is a liar. He was not visiting a friend in Vancouver. So it was really great to see like his major connection. It wasn't just a cameo. He actually had connections to Constantine, and he mentioned a character on Lucifer as well about Constantine doing something for him. So it felt like an actual tie into the Arrowverse that worked really well, rather than just showing like other characters that were part of the DC world beforehand and then them just disappearing. Like, this actually felt more like concrete, like we could see maybe Constantine show up in season 5 of Lucifer or something like that, and vice versa. So that was really nice. And then Barry being the paragon of love, finding out that he was the paragon of love, no one was surprised, and that's why this episode was super important to showcase, like, fans. Yes, Barry being the paragon of love, and basically, like, that's, I feel like that's why West Allen was showcased as much as they were.
If Barry wasn't the paragon of love, if he was, like, if Kara was a paragon of love, then they wouldn't have an issue with it. But if Barry was, like, the paragon of hope, then, of course, like, Oliver should have been, like, the most hopeful person in the universe. He should have been it.
Yes, yes, the jealousy. But the fact that West Allen was showcased as the couple, the rock, the foundation, essentially, throughout this episode, like every time they had like 2 reunion scenes this episode, they had 3 kisses, you know, Barry telling Iris that her heart, resourcefulness, and intelligence are what make her a hero, which I think was super important for everybody to hear, because I know it was nice because they both give each other hope in a lot of ways, but they are each other's heroes. So it's nice to see that he is like telling her that she can convince Ryan Choi to come with them as a paragon, because that is what she does and that is what she's good at and that is her strength. So I don't know. Sometimes, like, we always, you know, we could always use more West Allen moments throughout the show, but when the writers decide to ramp up their romance, they write such poetic shit. I don't understand it, but it's beautiful. So, like, the reiteration of Barry saying that he's gonna, you know, wherever he is, if he disappears for however long, basically, like, don't get married, Iris. I will be back. And like, basically,
low key, that is like, if I disappear, just know I am always running back. So do not fall in love and move on after I die.
But just like the idea that they are
going to dare move on.
I am always watching you
from the Speed Force. But yeah, just like the idea of them being each other's home was really solidified in this episode, and like his repetition of the lines he sang to her when he proposed was really, really nice. So it felt like we got those moments that were missing throughout the entirety of most of season 6 anyway, and we got them all here. So it felt like very satisfying going into the hiatus where, you know, no one is angry that we didn't get anything at all. So all of that was great. And then Kate and Kara almost fighting, like the little hand fisting at the side. They're about to, like, go at each other. And then you know, Kate having the kryptonite but then handing it back to her, but Kara says, like, to keep it, like she trusts her not to use it or whatever. I think was super important, because Kara has had trust issues with friends who have had kryptonite and planned on probably using it at some point. So it was nice that she has, like, she found some balance with Kate and knows that she won't go to such drastic measures. So their friendship seems to be, like, nicely evolving in these last 3 episodes, and that was really great to see. I really loved, I think of all the things Crisis would rewrite, so quote unquote, even though we know the Earths will be restored to some degree, was the fact that Cisco had his vibe powers back, because I feel like that's just like a you know, they wanted to correct that. I don't know.
Before he dies.
Before he... What? No! I just think that, like, I don't know who felt some type of way about this storyline, but maybe they wanted Cisco to have powers moving into 6B. Who knows? But that's what it felt like. So Monitor giving him back his powers was really nice to see for, like, the moment that he had his little screen time to help out. Yeah, it's just good to see Cisco, you know, out there in the fight. Yeah, all of that stuff. I just feel like this episode was very, like, it hit you right in the feels, but it also shocked you in the end. And I think that's just what it was supposed to do. And I feel like it was the strongest of the three in terms of, like, writing, in terms of character development, in terms of character moments. In terms of, like, the fact that the entirety of 6A, Barry was prepping the team and everyone for his death, and then he ended up losing everybody, was really sad. And then he, you know, his last call out to Iris was super sad, and then him immediately wanting to go back, probably not knowing what happened. I look forward to seeing how it's going to play out. I feel like it's been a while since I was really excited about a Flash episode in this way, with, like, being online with everybody and watching and seeing all those moments. It just felt very satisfying in the end.
I agree with this. I approve this message. I definitely agree that it was the best of the three episodes. It had the best balance. It didn't, like you said, Jess, it didn't have, like, the immediate urgency of the first episode, but it had, I thought, the most heartfelt scenes and the most, like, emotional character beats. And also, like, by the end, that twist was amazing. Not just the fact that it was Lex, who is now Superman, the Paragon of Truth or whatever, but also the fact that literally everyone else is gone, right? It's, like, just the seven of them. Like, you have no idea where they're going to go from there. For me, I'm just kind of, like, I was laughing a little bit because I was, like, I feel like at this point they would just be, like, fuck it, let's just die. Like, what are we going to do? Procreate amongst ourselves? Because they don't know that they can turn back the clock yet. So, I don't know. I thought that. I think that it'll be interesting to see where they go from that. But obviously, at the same time, because it was such a big change, you know, like, we all know there's no way that everyone is dead except for them. Like, literally impossible. So, again, it gives you that sense of, like, okay, they have to be able to fix this. I'm not even going to spend my holidays upset about this, you know? It's kind of like the Infinity War thing, right? There's no way this is going to stand, so... It's devastating for now, but we'll be okay in a couple months, or in a month, or in a couple weeks, whatever time it is for the crisis. But more specifically, I absolutely loved all the Barry and Iris moments. I don't know why there was, like, a quota that we couldn't get. We couldn't get this stuff until the crossover, but the stuff they saved for the crossover was great. We got three kisses, even if two of them were the same. We got to see Iris, like, Barry actually, like, care about, reach out for, speak to Iris and take her into consideration. And Iris's speech to Ryan Choi was perfect, because it is kind of like a way of showcasing her point of view, right? Like, because as much as it hurts her to be left behind by Barry, or to watch Barry go off and fight and, like, potentially kill himself, like, every day, she also knows that what he's doing is selfless. What he's doing is for everyone. You know, that her husband is a hero, is the paragon of love, like, whatever. And I love that she said that, like, as a human, there's still a lot that you can contribute, right? Mm-hmm. That you are what they're fighting for. That was beautiful. And also Ryan's reaction was very natural, and I totally supported him. I was like, yes, go be with your wife and child. Not that I actually expect us to get to see a lot of Ryan in the future, but if we did, I like that he's already married with a child. I think that's cool. As long as we get them back, of course. That would be really unfortunate if we did not. Anyway, I love, once again, Kara and Kate's burgeoning friendship was highlighted. I love the way that they kept you in suspense with the kryptonite, and then they kind of flipped again with Paragon of Hope, Paragon of Courage, right? With Kara being like, I'll have the courage to, you know, not use the book. And then Kate was like, I hope, and I have the hope that you won't, or whatever. So yay. I love them. And it's definitely the most I've liked Kate has been in this crossover.
Same.
And, And the most I've liked Ruby as Kate has been in this crossover, whether it's because she's growing into her role or because she had the benefit of being written by a bunch of other people. And the Kara is probably her best match on screen so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, to bring out the best in her. So, yeah, I like that. All of that is good. Both the Flash cameo, like Flash 90, Barry Allen cameo was amazing, as was, of course, Jefferson. He has had to just go through so much, and yet he put it aside in order to, you know, save what isn't even his Earth, right? The last remaining Earth was beautiful. And his scene with Barry was so great. Like, that's the kind of writing that I want to see on The Flash all the time. And I feel like we've been missing it a lot this season. Basically all the writing in this episode, we've been missing a lot this season for whatever reason. So it was great to finally see the heart back in Flash, which we've had a couple of times, like maybe 3 episodes out of the season, but still not enough. So yeah, I really loved it. I thought he was like so instrumental in this episode that, again, I don't understand how he was not a Paragon, because it seemed like he should have been. And then the fact that that we got to see older Barry, Flash 90, sort of give himself up, right? Die for our Barry, was heartbreaking and beautiful. And of course, Barry didn't want it to happen because he's just so desperate to die. but I loved that, you know, that even if Cisco and Caitlin were like, oh no, old Flash, don't do that, they're still like holding Barry back, like, you bitch, you are going to live. Let this
Cisco
man
special
die
was like,
you.
Come on, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Hurry up and die, sir. So anyway, so that was great. And I even liked the little hug between them, you know, when they thought that they were going to say goodbye. I was like, oh, cute little team hug. Okay. So yeah. I also loved, you know, when Iris and Ralph went to go talk to Ryan and Ralph thought that he was the one, but really it was Ray. Because Ray, you know, Ray is going to be Ryan's hero. So that was a cute little bit of a nod to canon, because we don't actually get to see him be the protege of Ray. But maybe we will in Legends. We don't know. Maybe we will. So yeah, that was really cute. But yeah, I mean, I even leaked a couple tears in the the fact that they actually included a scene from The Flash, right? From the 90s show of The Flash with Tina and Barry. Even though I did kind of like, as soon as he's like, yes, Tina, relating Tina to Iris. And I was like, nope, I can't hear you anymore. I don't know what you're saying. But I did, when they actually showed the scene, I was like, oh, that's so cute. So, you know, how nice for them. So yeah, I mean, overall, it was like a lot of really great moments, but they were building to a great to the plot overall, to the story. So that was much better than the second episode. Also, even though, again, this plot will be in the dislikes, the moment with Diggle bringing Oliver back and then the Spectre showing up was great. Like, I thought it was nice that like Diggle and Oliver's friendship shine through in that way, right? Like, oh, I'd never leave behind brother or whatever. And then Spectre was like, nope, we still need his soul. Thanks. So yeah, I thought it was like, yay that we're introducing the Spectre. I like getting the stuff from the comic. And also yay that we got Lila and Harbinger, you know, being turned by the Anti-Monitor. And then she's sort of like what derailed everything. And yet at the same time, you know that the Monitor has a plan because he told Pariah to do the thing that he knows he needs to do. And Pariah was like, I don't know. Oh, wait, I do know now. So yeah, I look forward to seeing what that plan is that the Monitor has in place that's going to incorporate or derail what Lila / Harbinger already derailed with Anti-Monitor. And also when they were disappearing, I think it's right when they were disappearing. Iris and Clark had that little moment.
Yeah.
It was like tiny, minuscule, but it was really nice.
It's like in such a short time, they had just like grown into like BFFs.
Yeah. But it's just like that look like, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, like,
yeah,
this is like, they're going to stop this or they're going to fix this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So yeah. Yeah. Oh,
that's why I love they released the TV lineup picture of Iris. They're like, well, if you thought she was dead, she's
right.
Not, she's going to be
not.
6'10".
Take that, haters.
The multiverse is reborn anew. This is Iris from Earth 1252. But anyway. So there you go. Those were my likes. What did not spark joy in this episode?
I think we already like mainly covered it in the other episodes, but since he's back in this one, like Pariah, not like the fact that he is there and he's just kind of like, I'm here. There's, you know, I did something bad. We can't stop this. Like he's like, there's nothing. He didn't do anything. Like he didn't really provide any help. He just kind of like showed up when Cisco and Frost were at the door and he's like, I can't remember anything that happened, so I'm pretty much useless, but you can vibe my memories. And then like that was like, oh, so that's why I have my powers, you know, like, but he doesn't really, I don't know. I'm just so disappointed overall with how Pariah has not really factored very much into this crossover in the same way that Lila has as Harbinger, seeing as how they're both very much a part of the crisis in the comics. I just feel like he could have been like incorporated much more better. He goes to bring Jefferson, but like he doesn't really even seem like he's that big on like the Monitor's special team list. Like he's not all-star, he's just kind of like a bench player that shows up occasionally to like look at stuff. I feel like he was just kind of like a little bit disappointing. And then, what else? The whole, like, I agree that it was, like, fun to see Spectre come into the episode and how that's going to come into play. And it'll play, like, a huge role. It makes sense why it happened the way it happened. And now, like, he has, like, Oliver has Spectre's powers. And the next episode is Arrow. So, and you can't really, they can't really do, like, the Arrow episode without the Arrow. So, like, that kind of explanation makes sense. But, you know, if I don't see how we needed to waste like two other episodes to get to this point. I thought like Diggle and Oliver's connection and him being able to bring Oliver back was like a nice bro moment, but I also feel like it happened like really, really quickly. So like, couldn't y'all have done this like an episode ago? Just like bring Diggle earlier and you could have gotten to his soul back a lot quicker or, you know, whatever. So yeah, like I guess the whole, again, it's not just the Flash episode, but the fact that the whole Oliver saga within the crossover was stretched out so long to get to like one specific point. And the fact that Jim Corrigan, I mean, the man got a check, but he only got a check for saying like one line and then he's not going to be in the crossover anymore because Oliver's taking over that position. So a little bit. What was the point for that? I don't know. I don't think I had, because I think, like I said, I think this was my favorite of the three. So I don't have as many dislikes or strong dislikes because they've all pretty much played out in the first two episodes. But I guess at the end, I thought it was really dumb. Like speaking of Paragon, not Paragon, but Pariah not really doing shit at the end when he is, like, oh, I know what I'm supposed to do now. And we know that Earth One is destroyed now, getting destroyed by the Antiminer, and it's coming towards the Wave Rider. And so, like, he decides to use his powers to save every Paragon, but no one else. Like, there's other people on the ship, and you, like, can't send them to the vanishing point? Like, why just save seven people but not everybody? Like, that just seems like stupid. Like, did you not have enough power to do that? And by the way, they're on a fucking Wave Rider. It's a time traveling goddamn ship, so why don't you fucking time travel to the past or something? Like, that would be in my predictions on how they're actually going to do that. But just like, you're on a ship that can travel through space and time, maybe you could probably, like, I don't know, use that. I don't know. That's just me. That's how I would think, but apparently that's not how people think in the Arrowverse. So whatever.
I was gonna say the same thing about that, and the fact that, like, well, why would you do that? You could have. I mean, if they're gonna be there anyway, at least you could have sent them back to Earth if you're gonna make them disappear along with everybody else. But whatever. I think my main nitpick for this episode, besides the Oliver stuff, which I'll get to, is the fact that I feel the lack of urgency with the Earth One disappearing would have been better if they actually showed the people of Earth One rather than limiting the locations to the Wave Rider and then to wherever Earth 90 Flash was situated, like in the underground tunnel or whatever, because those are like the only two places that they really were the entire time. Everybody was just chilling on the Wave Rider.
Like Lois is like randomly watching like all these Earths die like rapidly.
Yeah, and no one was doing anything. I think if they wanted to utilize the Flash cast better, they could have had, since Iris was doing her thing elsewhere, like going to get Ryan Choi, they could have had Team Citizen reporting on the crisis, like it's going on in their city, and Ryan even mentions the Red Skies in Central City, so like somebody should have been talking about it, or there should have been people panicking outside. I don't know, something, even if it was just like a minute of it, would have helped. And then if this crossover is trying to get people to watch Mia's show as a Green Arrow, then they can forget it, because what is the point of Mia in this episode specifically if she can't be the one to help restore Oliver's memories? Like, why are you here? I mean, it makes sense that Oliver did, because that's like the true OTP of Arrow, in my opinion. But then
Diggle and Oliver.
Yeah, because it makes sense. They have a history. Everybody knows that history. We've seen their relationship evolve. Mia just showed up. So her connection with Oliver is fine, because like their daughter, you know, daughter. And father, but it's like, I don't really care, you know? So people will care more about Diggle and Oliver, which that made sense. So her being there and her being in every episode so far is just kind of unnecessary, because she's not really doing much besides doing the one thing that she shouldn't be doing anyway. So whatever.
So anything relating to Oliver and Mia, and then also Pariah.
Basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my lack of joy as well. It didn't spark joy for me, mostly that we were still doing this whole plot dedicated to getting Oliver back, and that then it just turned out that he's going to be the Spectre. I think that that kind of takes away the impact of the surprise. I think it would have been better if they had been like, oh, so sad, fallen soldier, we're going to cry about it for like two scenes, and then we move on with no Oliver until, you know, he shows up like he's the fucking Spectre. That would have been way cooler. However, I totally forgot to say my likes. I loved the Lucifer and Constantine plotline. So, like, that part was great. All those Lucifer scenes are awesome. I need a whole episode of Lucifer and Constantine crossing over, you know, whichever show it's got to be on, Legends or Lucifer. I need it! Anyway, so yeah, that was a joy. But a lack of joy was the reason why they were doing it, which is having to bring back Oliver. Nobody cares. And then going through Lian Yu and being the whole like, oh, Lian Yu is purgatory. So whatever. I hate it. And also, why would Oliver be in purgatory? Whatever. Okay, it's fine. So he should just be in heaven for saving a billion lives. I think that pretty much wipes his ledger clean. But okay.
The Good Place points system is broken.
Exactly. No one gets into the Good Place. Anyway. Spoilers. So aside from that, I don't really care that Mia wasn't the one that brought him back. So that's like not a downgrade for me. But in general, the amount of Mia over the course of these three episodes, when, again, she has been here for, like, 2 seconds.
2 minutes, yeah.
Is exactly, like, it's just further proof that Oliver rules the universe and that Guggenheim's opinions rule the universe. And I'm not here for that. I don't like that. It's annoying to me, but that's okay. Aside from that, yeah, Pariah, I mean, like, even when he was like, oh, I'm here because a tragedy's going to happen. I'm only here to witness tragedies. I was like, it would help if we'd actually seen you witness some fucking tragedies.
Yes.
Instead of just hearing about it. Like you're saying, why didn't we see more of Earth One? Why didn't we see Pariah witnessing the Earth Oneness? Like, I feel like at some point, I almost forgot that, like, everyone else is dead now. You know what I mean? Earth One is gone. We didn't see our, like, that thing that Barry saw over and over again a billion times. Like, we didn't even see that, did we?
Yeah.
No, because it didn't happen like that. Because they were on Earth One.
But Killer Frost and Vibe were, for example. So were Joe and Cecile, and then they kind of showed them disappearing. They were still on Earth One.
Yeah, wouldn't they be on Earth One?
But like in the thing that Barry saw, Iris is also on Earth One.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be exactly the same thing, of course.
Yeah, but they could have shown like a version of that.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. We should have seen something of like the characters on Earth One disappearing. Like, let Jesse L. Martin and Danielle Nicola,
with their babies.
Exactly.
Like, the baby I know.
No one cares about baby Jenna. So anyway, so I don't know. I thought that was a wasted opportunity. When we've been building up to this moment for so long. We saw Earth 38 disappear, but we didn't get shit for Earth 1, so, like, whatever. And I totally agree with you that, like, it doesn't make sense why he wouldn't rescue all of them. He just rescued the Paragons, but I guess the Monitor has very specific rules about what needs to go down, and I guess if some of those people were still alive, the rest of them wouldn't fight as hard to get them back? I don't know. Barry'd be like, I have Iris. Do I really need anyone else?
He really would.
I guess we're on our own. It's cool. We got our part down.
Exactly. So I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. But anyway, otherwise I thought it was really good, but I think that there were still some tweaks and also stuff carrying over from the previous episodes that you can really help that made it less than perfect. So, do we have predictions for the final two parts of Crisis?
Well, like, obviously my Obler is going to be a huge part in Arrow because, one, it's his show, and two, now he has Spectre's powers, and right. So I feel like, you know, they're gonna like freak out for a minute and try to kill Lex, probably be super mad, because I feel like even though Lex rewrote himself as Paragon, like, it's not gonna work because it's Lex and not who it's supposed to be. But Oliver will show up and, like, Spectre then back to, you know, the either like the dawn of time or like the origin of the anti-monitor. And in doing that, like, he'll bring back some of the Earths that were lost, because we know, like, from the filming, we saw these big, like, action sequences with all the heroes, including, like, Nia and, you know, Renee and Dinah. So they have to come back some kind of way. So I think, like, that'll mainly be, like, Oliver's job. And because he's still in his, like, his soul. It's, like, soul Oliver, so he's still not, like, alive. But I think he'll, like, redie afterwards. At the end of Crisis, he'll, like, give the Spectre back his powers, and then he'll just, like, go off into, like, the Paradise Dimension. So I don't think he's, like, back. He's not, like, alive. He's still not having his body. But he will play the important part of that the Spectre did in the comics. So I think that will happen.
Yeah.
Oh, the whole... Because I mentioned this, like, when you brought up Jason Kent. Mm-hmm. And we know that Superman and Lois, this is totally unrelated to Crisis, but Superman and Lois show, we're looking for, like, two boys. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping that it's not Damian being one of those boys, since both boys are white. But if it's, like, John and then, like, Jason, like,
that
maybe,
makes,
like,
more sense.
Lois, like, gave him the idea from, like, Kal-El, and there's, like, a tribute to Kal-El that they named, like, their second son Jason, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, especially because they did mention that in the Supergirl episode, I think, that he dreamed that they'd have two kids.
Yeah.
And she was like, you can't always see the future, LOL.
I just thought that they would adopt Jason somehow.
Oh, that's also possible.
I mean, that could Clark be that could it. Oh, that's true. So that could actually be related to Crisis. I don't know.
And he's probably already a teenager.
Isn't Jason dead?
He is right now, but if they bring back all the Earths, he'd be alive.
I thought he died. Oh, okay. I just thought he was already dead.
No, because in the episode, you had Brandon's Clark tell the other Clark, he's like, oh, you look a lot like my son Jason. And so at this point in time, he's probably already a teenager, like, older. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I assume one of my predictions is that baby Jonathan will come back as a teenager, or, like, he'll somehow, the,
like,
the crisis
Earth,
affected,
like,
he'll
him grow, like, faster.
Yeah, he'll grow faster, so that's why they have two grown boys instead of the baby. And bouncing off of that Spectre theory, I think that he will somehow, I don't know, if maybe haunt the Speed Force, which is why he can talk to Barry and tell him, like, what's going on. But also, I think that Lex will stick around somehow and team up with Reverse Flash, because there's still that villain team up, if they want to, like, nod to the comics a little bit. That they can do. And then I don't know if it'll happen, but I do think, because as much as I loved Ryan Choi, I think that it was odd to introduce a new character like this to be a Paragon in Crisis. So I do think, because Brandon's leaving and Ryan is Adam in the comics, and he kind of gets bestowed the super suit by Ray, essentially, even though he was gone at the time, Right. That's going to happen in Legends, and he's going to be his replacement.
That doesn't make sense. My only prediction is just boring, that I think that the other, like, several Earths have been, the ones that we, you know, are going to keep, have been secluded elsewhere. So that the Anti-Monitor thinks they're dead, but they're not actually gone.
That's interesting.
Just like the comic. It's not that exciting.
Which Earths do you think have been secluded?
Black Lightning Earth, Earth 1, and Titan's Earth. Because they have to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I think Earth 38 is still going to merge with Earth 1.
Yeah.
They're going to stay around.
I think because they spent too much time on that one.
So mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be lame if they didn't. Why save those billion people if they were just going to go
hide the Earth?
Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. That's my thought.
Well, do you want to hear some thoughts from some of our feedback?
I hate our feedback listeners. I don't want to hear anything from them. No, I'm just kidding. Please talk to us.
Okay. Well, let's start with Paulina's crisis thoughts. Of course, she had Black Lightning thoughts also, but we'll get to those later. She says, we've got three parts of Crisis Down, and the insanity feels like it's only just begun, so I'm going to break some things down. And I will also break these down, but I will not break them down in full, so you will have to go to our Tumblr to get all of her thoughts. But here are some of her thoughts. On her likes, Crisis did give me my Wes Allen rights, so that's all that really matters. Three kisses, can you believe? I love their sweet moment in Batwoman, as Barry just finds peace in Iris's arms. I know how much has been discussed about how Barry was anxious and pissed for most of the episode, but finds peace and tranquility in Iris's arms in that scene. And I'm just so here for that level of soulmate energy. Iris gathering the strength to talk to Ryan Choi and convince him to come back because of what Barry said to her before he left to find Earth 90 Flash and Jeff. Barry telling Iris that her superpower is her intelligence and her heart, and that he knows she's the only one that'll be able to convince Ryan to come back. My West Allen heart is fragile. I cannot handle this. Let's see. West Allen reunion. You can sense a pattern here in her likes. That kiss was almost a whole 360 degree turnaround. The West Allen theme playing when they saw each other. Barry telling Iris that he told her he'd always run home to her. That hug that immediately followed that kiss. Wow, this episode really gave me my rights. Barry and Jeff, their final conversation was wonderful, and I loved every minute of it. Barry, Jeff, Kate, Kara, the superior crossover duos. I love how this crossover has developed Kate and Kara's friendship. Although the Iris and Lois team up was woefully short, I admired every minute of watching these two biased supporters in action, and I love the trio combination of Iris, Clark, and Lois. Speaking of which, I really liked Iris and Clark's nod to one another before they both got vaporized. Smallville, Clark, and Lois are still adorable. Nice to see that they got a happy ending together, even though it's tad peeved that Clark gave up his powers, only because Smallville was always the story up until Superman. Kara being the paragon of hope and Kate being the paragon of courage, we stand. Barry is the paragon of love. Ryan Choi and Kingdom Come Clark must be protected at all costs. Literal rays of sunshine. Lex as a new paragon was a twist I did not expect, so I'll give the crossover points for that. And then in her dislikes, she's like, anything I did not mention are either found forgettable or disliked. Jeff not being a paragon is absurd. I agree. Honestly, Supergirl and Batwoman were episodes, and then The Flash was a real deal. Even still, it seemed like a lot of time was wasted in the first three episodes just to find the paragons and get them together so that when the budget Infinity War happened, they'd be able to come together and defeat the Anti-Monitor in parts 4 and 5. Barry was pretty wasted as a character in the first two parts, not to mention he was acting all kinds of OOC in Batwoman. Barry specifically told Cisco not to go looking for a way to save him and that he had to accept the inevitable, but when Oliver dies or whatever, he immediately goes along with Mia's dumb plan to resurrect Oliver. By the way, the whole Oliver dying coming back to life plot seems pointless now. E90 Barry dying was a cop-out, but I'm okay with it because honestly, the twist at the end is probably more interesting. I also figured that after they killed and brought Oliver back, they were not going to do the same to Barry. Despite several crossover character interactions, I feel like only Kate and Kara have really had any emotional moments that have been broken grounds in terms of development of their relationship. Barry and Jeff had good moment as well that spoke to the potential strong relationship between the heroes, but for the most part, I found the crossover interactions underwhelming. More time should have been spent allowing these characters to have more emotional moments together so that we could get invested in new fun dynamics. because I know for a fact that I still turned to the usual dynamics in each of the shows and found them far more emotionally gratifying than any new crossover dynamic. And I'm not just talking about Barry and Iris, because that's the given, but also Alex and Kara and Oliver and Diggle. It goes to show that no matter what, the status quo in terms of relationships garner the most emotional response will naturally be the ones that are closest to their respectively characters, and those relationships are relationships which they do not share with one another. Next up, we have Celeste, who says, "Hello, lady. I hope you're doing well. Didn't send feedback last week because the Flash kind of frustrated me, and I figured I would save the rant for another time." So, quick feedback so far on part one. Thought the pacing was all over the place. Some moments were slow and quiet, while others were randomly fast-paced, and it was honestly kind of jarring to watch. Kryptonians and their damn pods. Don't you think they would have learned the lesson after the first two? Thank you. No, they did not. Allura being brought back just to die. We hate to see it. Lena somehow making the end of the world about her, pretends to be shocked. The whole time she kept telling Alex they weren't friends. I wanted to tell her to push her feelings aside and make the damn thing already. Part two, don't remember much of this part, to be honest. Seeing Kara being noticeably not okay was nice. I truly thought they were going to have her push it to the side, as per usual. It was nice seeing Smallville Clois. Clark giving up his powers to have a family with Lois actually caught me off guard. Barry and Iris having a private moment? What universe is this? I loved it, though. It was sweet. The whole bring back Oliver from the dead plot was so pointless, especially given there is supposed antimatter wave coming to knock out all the Earth. Kate and Kara were a good duo. Love them in their scenes. Prefer them over Oliver and Barry. Sorry, not sorry. Part three, that ending, wasn't expecting it, to be honest. I'm still wrapping my head over it. Barry and Iris having more private one-on-ones and two crossover episodes in the entirety of 6. I think she meant 6A. She wrote 6B, but I think she meant 6A. Hate to see it. But I did love their scenes, especially the reunion one. Kate and Kara, again, one of my favorite duos. Love that Kara trusts Kate not to use kryptonite against her. Iris recruiting Ryan Choi is nice. I love how they had their connect with him as non-meta or whatever. It proves the point that you don't have to be a meta or have powers to be a superhero. Lex messing up stuff again? Not surprised. Jefferson showing up, one of my favorite moments, the way him and Barry connected almost instantly. Yeah, I hope when Crisis is over, we maybe get a Black Lightning, The Flash crossover. I would love to see it. So that was Celeste. And then finally, we have feedback from Swara on Crisis. He says, "Hello, ladies. Honestly, Crisis so far has been a mixed bag for me of highs and lows. The highs definitely include Iris being part of the action with Lois and Superman and Kara and Kate's storyline. I wish we had a scene or two of Iris talking with Lois about journalism. Me too. It seems to me like something that got cut and I don't like it. However, Candace and Bitsy continue to shine their scenes together, hoping that the Superman and Lois series leads them to interacting more. Brandon as Superman, again, is fantastic and I'm glad to see his storyline continue. Albeit with all the fridging for it. Kate and Kara had great scenes together, showing the push and pull of their friendship as they debate about what to do. Kevin Conroy in love and live action is spectacular, and I love how he challenged them both. All the actors brought their A-game here. As far as a negative, literally cannot deal with all his time spent on this bearded man and his attempted resurrection. Literally rolling my eyes, still thinking about the time waster with that. Sure, there was kind of a point made at the end that he has to be a guardian or something, but again, I do not care. Typically, I've been a fan of John Cryer's Lex Luthor, but here it was too much. We get it. He hates Superman, so he's going to, instead of saving the multiverse he's a part of, wants to rule killing all Superman. It's frankly dull, and we should have had the superior Luthor, Lena, who, though still flawed, still worked to save the Earth, which I think that's, like, a point, because, like, Lex is... instead of, like, trying to waste time killing Superman, you would think he would be like, this is my chance to, like, be the savior of the world. I don't know. Maybe that was his point in becoming a Paragon at the end of the episode of The Flash, but I don't know. We'll see. Last point, Suarez says, the switching of the Barrys was a cop-out. While I'm thankful for more West Allen time, Barry not sacrificing himself after all this time talking about it felt really cheap. I guess there's something else that could happen later. I don't know. It just felt really weird and unearned to me. We actually did get Crisis feedback from Tasha, so I'll read that out finally. She says, oh, she gave us an explanation. Because, every time she doesn't send us feedback, I'm like, oh my God, what have we done? But she says that I was away on holiday, but I'm back and finally caught up on the podcast in Crisis. So welcome back, Tasha.
Thank you for sticking around. I'm sure we say a lot of things you don't agree with.
We love you, Tasha.
She says she has very mixed feelings on this crossover. The character moments have been solid, but the handling of the plot has been lackluster at best. I will say having comic knowledge makes catching the Easter eggs and understanding the overall story easier, but they haven't done a great job making it understandable for the general audience. Some moments feel too slow, others feel too rushed. Her likes. It was nice seeing Ashley Scott's Huntress from Birds of Prey TV show and having Snart be the voice on the Wave Rider. My little ramen noodle head, Princess Mia. Ramen noodle head. Princess Mia got her superhero suit. Love seeing my father-daughter Archer's bonding. Lucifer flirted with Mia and Dig, such a fun character, and I adored his interaction with Constantine. Dynamic between Kara and Kate has been a pleasure to watch. They play really well off of each other, and I feel like Kara brings out something in her that not even her co-stars do. Totally agree with that. Sarah and Oliver interactions were great, particularly her talk with E16 Oliver. She's wondering if it's a throwaway or if we'll see him again. Thought they did justice to Brandon Routh's Superman. Glad that he finally got to don a suit again. Lila went full evil and beat up my beloved Dick, yet I still stand. Audrey Marie Anderson is doing her thing as Harbinger. That smile when her eyes turned white, I was disturbed. Felicity Smoke gets a 100-page comic co-written by Marv Wolfman, and she figured out four of the Paragons. Love that for me. Side note, Tome of the Guardians, she used totally a Green Lantern Corps reference, which that is like a very, very subtle Easter egg, I think. The fact that they have Green Lantern reference in there, so that was cool. Back to Tasha. She says, conversations between Flash and Black Lightning was really strong. The connection felt real and honest. I hope we get to see more of that. Also love the bro-nod between Dig and Jefferson, especially since John Stewart's Green Lantern is Lynn's brother and Jefferson's in-law. Interesting. Oliver Zeth saved 1 billion people, my hero. She's like, yes, I know that they died on E1, got destroyed, but they're still going to reverse that, so his heroic deed is still valid. Lastly, I pride myself on not being petty, but since I had people jump in my mentions on social media to call me delusional when I said Oliver Queen was not staying dead, Dig would help resurrect him, and he'd be Spectre, I really, really liked being proven right. So once again, like, if we had Tasha's feedback for the other episodes, she definitely would have predicted the Spectre thing, and we definitely would be like, of course, Tasha's right. So, and she is.
There we go.
Yeah. Dislikes, they had this random tower come up on ground E-38 that was meant to delay the antimatter wave. It would have been nice if it had some setup, and the Dementor army was somehow being stopped by laser eyes and batarangs and arrows. I feel like Constantine doing a spell would have made more sense in that situation. Point. That's true. Dig and William not being present for Oliver's death was trash, especially when they made a point of Dig saying, I'll stay by your side until the end in 807.
Pariah showing up. That's so true. I was going to mention that. I forgot.
Yeah. Pariah showing up to info dump his name, date, birth, social security, and dating history in the midst of the death scene was distracting from the characters grieving. Also not a fan of the rushed way that they handled Kara finding out about the loss of Argo and her mom's death. Well, I think E90 Flash dying on the cosmic treadmill with the scene of him and Tina playing was a fitting way to close out that series. It certainly undercut everything that they have been building on the current series. To spend this season saying goodbye just to have someone else take the hit felt hollow, hoping that at some point during hours 4 and 5, Barry has a significant hero moment. Kingdom Come got replaced by Lex. Like, who asked for that? Wasn't a fan of how they utilized Kevin Conroy Batman, which is unfortunate because his was the appearance I was looking forward to the most. So her predictions are that a version of Oliver is dying again before Crisis ends. Yes. Well, I guess maybe because she's saying a version. So I'm wondering if she's thinking that E16 Oliver will come back to play and he will be the one dying.
Could be.
Also, the monitor is going to mess with Connor's mind memories and change him in some way. Connor. Oh, Connor. Okay. It's like, Connor who? Like, Connor Kid? Like, who? Superboy? When did he come? But she means, like, Connor, like, Arrow Connor. So those are her predictions.
And Tasha is always right. So
yes, I guess like one of the dislikes for me is that like what stakes? Like no one has died. The only person on our side that's died is Oliver, and then he came back. So there hasn't really been any of like the big stakes, and like all the worlds are destroyed. But we know that's not gonna like that can't continue. Obviously, so they're coming back. So I'm guessing like there's gonna be like a lot of death in parts 4 and 5. that people won't try to resurrect their friends again, because that was only for Oliver.
I do expect one major death, at least, just like they killed Stein and two crossovers ago. Something will happen.
I would hope. I mean, like, it's not like I want him to die, but it does feel a little silly to not have someone big die.
Who are your death predictions?
I do think that Oliver will, in the end, die again.
Yeah, that's kind of a given.
Yeah. Maybe Ray.
As for anybody, yeah, Ray. I think Ray for sure.
What about on The Flash?
I don't think anyone on The Flash is going to die other than Nash/Pariah.
You don't think Cisco's going to die?
I think he is.
I don't know. But, like, he would be, like, the most surprising since, like, he's not really on social media anyway. So there's no, like way for people to get hints or cryptic tweets or whatever from him. But, like, I don't know. In a war, people die. And in a superhero, like in the line of work of superheroing, to have like no one die.
Flash has always played it super safe, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
I think if they were gonna not play it super safe, the most obvious ones would be Killer Frost and Cisco.
I mean, like, I would have wanted,
like, if they really wanted to,
but I would have like expected like her to die from that one, just because they haven't had a story for her in like seasons.
And they finally gave her one.
And they finally gave her one, and some of it was had to do with like her being afraid of death or not being able to deal with any kind of death around her.
Right.
And also, Cisco had to deal with grief in two episodes straight. So if like though they would be the most obvious candidates, but we know they won't do it. Yeah.
Danielle is active on social media, and we know that she's been back on set since then. So it's not her.
Unless she's
just like hanging out there taking pictures just to fool everybody, which I doubt.
Yeah, I doubt it as well. But I don't think, though, I feel like, I don't know, because they were so like, LOL, dummies, of course he's not gone. For him to then die after Crisis? Not that that's proof of anything. I haven't seen any proof that he is going to die, aside from just like people continue to think he's going. So I'm going to stick with what Flash has always done, which is no one but another Wells.
Well, this Wells is gone. I mean, I would like for Wells not to come back.
That would be nice. But
at least if they're going to like not get rid of anybody, at least just don't bring him back, you know? So
yeah.
I don't think they're going to kill anybody on Supergirl either.
Yeah, I mean, no.
Unless at the most they... Yeah, I was going to say.
Who?
John.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's possible. I don't like it, but it is possible. He did make up with his brother. His dad is gone.
You've gone really hard on his storyline.
Alex is the new DEO person, so it is possible.
Yeah, they can't, like, bring back Jimmy or James to kill him in Crisis, so he's already gone.
Yeah.
Which so is how we thought he was going to go. That was a possibility.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone from Arrow is going to die, so... Other than Oliver. We already said that.
Lila could still die.
Lila could die. It's possible. Lila could die.
Do we think Diggle would die?
No.
If Oliver can't be around, then Diggle has to go. Because they are like the West Island parallel.
That would be kind of funny, though. He's like, I'm going with you, brother. I'm going with Paradise for a mission with you. They definitely both can't die. One or the other has to live. For the kids. Between Lila and Diggle, I mean.
Oh, that's true.
So they definitely both won't die. I feel like it would be shitty to kill Lila, since Lila is one of the few people that survives the Crisis book. So, but they don't care about that, so. I don't know.
Should we move on?
Yeah, we can move on. So, do we have a Lady with Gumption for Crisis?
Oh, Lady with Gumption for Crisis.
Oh, so many ladies this time.
Yeah.
You know what? For a Paragon of Destiny, Sarah didn't do shit.
That's true. She didn't.
Sarah did not do shit. Her destiny
was trying to resurrect Oliver.
And Mia also didn't do shit.
Nope.
So, like, the big three are Kate, Kara, and Iris. Then. Mm-hmm.
Kate, Kara, and Iris.
You're discounting Lois from this?
Yeah.
I mean, Lois just, I mean, well, she did pep talk She did pep talk Superman out of his red kryptonite, but yeah, otherwise.
Yeah, but I agree. She's like the weakest of the four. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think that I feel like Kate, I don't know, Kara had to deal with the most.
Like, yeah, but I feel like Kate did a lot of the emotional support work. Exactly. She had like the courage and the hope when Kara didn't.
Yeah. I feel like Kate, like that's a big character stretch for Kate. You know what I mean? Like she grew a lot over this crisis. So I might give it to Kate.
I would agree with that.
Interesting.
Woo! What is your thought? You've already been outvoted, but would you like
to? I know, I have been outvoted, so I will stay silent.
Would you like to make your case?
No, that's okay. I was going to go with Kara.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was expecting Iris.
I was expecting Iris, too.
No, no, I mean, Iris did great, obviously, just as usual. But I feel like, as a lead of her own show, Kara doesn't get a lot of time, you know? So...
Black Lightning is next. Part of the crisis, but not technically, but it really was. So, the Book of Resistance, Chapter 4, Earth Crisis. Winter finale. The Pierce family fears for Jennifer's life as she goes through crisis. That is the whole episode. And it was excellent. Tasha Smith directed the episode written by Lamont McGee. What sparked joy?
Maybe you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Just generally, we've lacked a lot of Jennifer perspective this season. So I loved all the Jennifer perspective. It was all about Jennifer. And we got so much from what she was thinking, why she was working with Odell. The whole monologue in the beginning was fantastic. The fact that she was going to send a message straight to Anissa was great because it kind of mirrored when Anissa was sending them all like goodbye messages. So this was like a different kind of message. But I like that she was finally going to open up to her sister about all the conflicting feelings she was having. And I like the fact that she was seeing the consequences. Let me backtrack. I've really loved how the crisis connected to Black Lightning, even though it wasn't like a direct thing. I feel like this episode was what I wanted to see more of in the actual crisis on Infinite Earths, because we saw the impact it had on a family on Earth just going through what they were going through on a regular day. And then you had red skies and how it affected them. So I feel like that was very effective here, specifically with the way they worked in Jennifer's powers. And then to have her sort of seeing, being like in the middle of seeing different Earths versions of her. It was great because she was seeing like, in a way, the consequences of what would happen if she went to either extreme. So these Jennifers both existed, but they were also like two sides of the coin for her. So in both of the scenarios, which were cleverly played out through the Earth, parallel Earths, like they had one thing in common, and neither Jennifer had a good relationship with her family. Like on Earth 1 Jennifer, which is bizarre, I guess at that point, the timelines are weird, but on Earth 1, Jennifer basically, like, she was estranged from her mother. She had issues with her dad because of how, I guess, he played out, how he treated her after she tried to save Freeland because he was doing the teachings for the ASA and whatnot. And then she was only close to Anissa on that Earth. And then on Earth 2, you had like the complete opposite where she wasn't close to any of them. They weren't communicating. And she was like evil Jennifer. She just did whatever she wanted. Power was her thing. And she went off on everybody. And then you have like our Jennifer, who was sort of stuck in the middle at this point, having to make a decision between what she wanted to do, like why she was working with the ASA, and how she kind of saw both sides of the argument. So I feel like this was the more balanced Jennifer, in which she knew that working with the ASA isn't necessarily right, but she was doing it for specific reasons anyway. So I liked that whole dynamic. It was excellently played. China and McClane was amazing. And I really loved the power. The E2 Jennifer was just like, she did so well.
That was the best.
Yeah, it really was. And it was just so exciting to like watch that play out and for us to finally understand, like, cause we've been asking, you know, why does Jennifer keep working with Odell this whole time? And we finally kind of got a response to that. And I think it was very satisfying, and it was great to see how that connected back seamlessly to, for the most part anyway, to the crisis, like having that be the episode that aired right before The Flash where Jefferson gets zapped to Earth One was really great. And I think that it was, they did it without losing any, most of the momentum that they've had going on this season.
Yeah. I thought like the narrative choice of the three different gens was a really interesting concept, and it tied in seamlessly to the Black Lightning world without being too out of left field, considering how Black Lightning and now has like previously had no connection to the rest of the Arrowverse, but it still has to do this like crossover crisis storyline. So it didn't really feel like Black Lightning had to stop everything to make the crossover work. They were still able to like incorporate that and still have it be like a Black Lightning episode. So even if you weren't really interested in the rest of the Arrowverse, you didn't feel like you were in a completely new world, like what the fuck is happening. Arjen is dealing with like a moral dilemma of trying to figure out like which side is the right side, you know, because she's got like Anissa and Jefferson on one side on the resistance and like, what are y'all doing? But like her mom is like clearly on the ASA side. So, and everything that she's heard from Odell seems like this side is the right side because there is like a Markovian threat and all this kind of stuff. So I like her talking through that and the monologue because it logically laid out like the reasons, like you said, like why she was continuing to work for Odell despite the things that ASA has done, which is something like we've been asking. So like the whole head and heart kind of situation, it puts a lot of like context behind like what she's been doing all season. And she's not like really a Lynn in this situation because she still clearly recognizes where like her father and sister ended up in this battle. They ended up on that side for a reason, and that's a reason enough to give her pause about like, is this the right side or not? So I like that, you know, like her, the whole thing, like her head is telling her, you know, what Odell is saying is true, and there's Markovians, and like stuff happens in war. You have to make hard decisions, but then her heart is like, but the people and the resistance is protecting the people, and so like who is right and who is wrong, and then all of that gets manifested when the red skies start happening, and she starts like phasing between universes, and specifically meets two extreme versions of the choice that she has to make. So you've got like E1 Jen, G-E-N, who chose the resistance, but she's not really better for it. She's a prisoner now. Odell murdered her father because Revan Holt was a snitch and snitched on the Underground Railroad. So Jefferson's dead. Freeland is still more or less suppressed by the ASA instead of the Markovian. So nothing is really better in Jen's world. And then you have Earth 2 Jen, J-I-N-N, which I don't know if there is like a, if that was like a thing, like a specific thing while one is like G-E-N and why the other is like J-I-N-N, but I'll get to that later. But anyway, so you have Earth 2 Jen who chose the ASA and was firmly on that side, and absolute power corrupted her. Absolutely. So she is definitely not better for it. She, you know, doesn't have the love or trust of anybody. I thought it was like a really interesting or cool line when she's talking to Odell about, you know, people, there is not really loyalty. People are only loyal to what they think you can bring. And once you are no longer of use to them, they're no longer loyal. But that's like her whole perception of like reality anymore. She brought peace, but she's not at peace. And she still lost her family because of that. And so both of them are miserable. It's like an angel and devil situation, but there's no clear answer that Jen needs. Like if Jen was like pushed into this situation to figure out what to do, she's not really no more clear on what she has to do between either of them, because both of them are still kind of like miserable. But it does kind of like give her perspective to kind of like talk it out with herself. So I thought like that whole concept was pretty cool.
Yeah, overall, yeah. I thought it was a really great episode that introduced Crisis and was tangentially related to it and gave us our own personal connection to it. And made that threat actually feel more real than most of the cameo, evaporations of the actual crossover. And it was a great showcase for both Jennifer and for China herself. Oh. Well, no, for China as an actress. Yes, it was great for Jennifer and for Jen and for Jen. But it was the best for China, who really got to show her range and kind of made up for the fact that we were so light on Jennifer early on in the season. And like you guys said, I love how it's like, it isn't even an angel and devil because both of the other Jennifers, Earth One and Earth Jennifer, are in really shitty situations. But it's just seeing how the extremes, like the different extreme choices can play out, right? Earth One, Jennifer went out of her way to defy the ASA by tampering with Freeland's water supply. And she won that battle, right? Freeland was freed from Odell, from becoming Odell's army, but at the same time, she lost her father and she's like locked up for however long that they have power, which is like one more day until the Earth, you know, ceases to exist. But still. I loved like when she had that scene with her mom, you know, after her dad died and her mom came to talk to her and she was basically saying like, was it worth it? Right. Like losing dad, was it worth all this? And the mom was like, yes, yes, it is worth it. You saved everybody.
Which is kind of hard. She's like, was it worth me being locked up and dad dying? And Lynn's like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because yeah, it's like logically, yeah, it is. But at the same time, you're like, thanks. So, and then of course the other Jennifer was like, where our Jennifer could end up if she keeps following Odell, right? Like being basically like painkiller, Khalil, like just like a stone cold killer with no compunction about what she's doing. And then like the idea of actually going so far as to kill her other Metas. And her family, like, that's, like, wild, right? I don't think that Jennifer could ever actually end up like that, but it is, like, the complete extreme of where she could go. So it was interesting to watch and to see her sort of, like, debate with those other Jennifers, to question her own allegiance to the ASA while also having to deal with that incoming crisis that they don't really understand, except for Gambi somehow magically just knows parallel universes are happening right now. But anyway... so yeah, overall, I thought it was a really great, like, character, piece. And also I thought it was, like on the outside, we see like ASA, like intercepting the resistance's attempts. Right.
Oh yeah.
So it's good that, again, they kept the through line of what the plot is for the season. And we're seeing just like how they can maintain, like, it went from like, what was like, it was a SARS epidemic. To now it's like vaccine, like anti-vaxxers or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we see how they're manipulating the media in a way so that no one comes to help Freeland. So that's pretty wild and upsetting, but that's all right. And then, of course, everything's put on pause because the Earth literally is, you know, destroyed at that point. But I do hope that once it is restored, we're going to keep the, you know, internal wrestling that Jennifer's gone through so that she'll be able to actually make the right choice for her when the show comes back. I also think that it's good that Anissa told her dad, I guess, that Khalil's alive. But it's a little weird because Anissa, or we know that he still has his memory, so, like, he could technically become himself again somehow. And yet, I guess the rest of them don't know that, so they're just like, put him down. Kill him. So, I don't know. I guess it'll be also interesting to see which way they go with that or what they do once they realize that his memories are still there. All right. And then that's the end of that. What did not spark joy about the episode?
I don't like where Lynn's story is going because she's sitting there making, she broke bad and she's sitting there making drugs on her kitchen counter and I'm concerned and I don't like it because she's just pouring it into her drinks now. And yeah, so that's happening and I hate it. Other things, I guess I did want to see more of Evil Jen. I don't think we got enough of that, which was sad because she was great and I feel like she only came in like the last 15 minutes or so,
right?
And I would have liked to see more of that, but I think, I mean, I would hope that Reverend doesn't sell them out in real life or in on this earth anyway. But yeah, no, generally it was a solid episode. I enjoyed it. I think those were like the most concerning things for me.
This is a nitpick, but like, why is it that no other show can respect Earth 2's aesthetics? Like, they're such great aesthetics. why even choose Earth 2? I think we had like a Tumblr and on, and I kind of like went off on the whole like absurdity of why it had to be Earth 1 and Earth 2 specifically. Like, literally, out of the infinite number of Earths in the multiverse. Like, why not pick one or two that have not already been done on another show? Like, what was E4 Jennifer up to, you know? Like, why did it have to be one and two when those are the ones that are most frequently used in the multiverse and can be contradicted chronological timeline, which is what happens in this fucking episode. I'm saying fucking a lot. This is everything that's like bothering me is causing me to curse. But no, like, in literally any, we haven't seen like Earth 5 and 6 Jennifers or anything.
That's
so
true.
You can make up your own aesthetics for your own Earth. Why not use one of the ones that are not frequently used in other parts of the Arrowverse? Like, I felt like, you know, it kind of plays into the ending, because at the end of the episode, both Jens like are like, you know, y'all see that? The white wave coming through, and then they disappear. But at that point in the crossover, like chronologically, Jefferson like disappears at the end of that episode in Black Lightning and shows up in the Flash. But the Flash, his part in the Flash still takes place on Earth 1, which was destroyed on Black Lightning just like the previous day, the previous episode.
That's true.
So it doesn't really, like, you could have avoided that by just having Jennifer be from, like, Earth 5 and 6, or 7, or 37, or, you know, any other place, except for 1 and 2. So it just kind of, like, messes up everything. So, but it's like a nitpick, but it's, like, actually, like, a really big frustration that they chose to do it that way. But, anyways, like, I like the narrative, even though I like the narrative concept of the Council of Jinns. I did think that Earth-Gen, G-E-N story went on a little bit too long. I don't know if, like, it's supposed to, like, Gen, like, G-E-N is, like, Genesis Gen, or, like, and then, like, Gen, J-I-N-N is something, like, else, because, like, you know, Gens, and that's another kind of, like, concept. I don't know if they were trying to do that, or they're just, like, how many different ways can we spell Jennifer? I don't know. But, like, I agree with you. Like, I feel like I really wanted to see more of Earth 2 Jen's story, because she seemed, like, more interesting than Earth 1, to be honest. And Earth 1's story went on, like, a little too long. We get it. Like, your life sucks. but, you know, it just lasts, like, a little too long.
Just because, like, get over it.
New channel. Change the channel, please. I kind of wish they had gone, like, back and forth between the two instead of, like, playing each out straight, like, one by one. Because, like, Jennifer, our Jennifer, is constantly phasing. Like, we see her constantly phasing in and out of consciousness, so, or in and out of world. So it would have made sense for her to be bouncing back and forth. It doesn't seem like she can control it that well. So it would have been, you know, more visually interesting, I would think, to see them jumping back and forth between the two different stories and how both Jens are reacting to the same thing in different ways. Yeah, that would have made it more interesting to me. Lynn, still a drug addict, resorting to making green light, which, like, where did she get the ingredients? Like, as soon as she left, was saved by Gambi, did she, like, go, like, looking for green light drug dealers to find ingredients to make her stuff? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. She kitchen. Dropped her bag last time.
Did she steal it? Like, she didn't even have time to steal any green light from the actual pit. So, yeah, that's another nitpick. But I mean, like, the fact that she's still, like, this is her main concern. Like, I almost thought that she was just going to ignore Ignis's phone call and, like, not show up. And then, because, like, she called and she kind of heard Anissa, but it was, like, breaking up. And then the cut scene was at Anissa's apartment and Jeff's coming in and, like, Lynn somehow beat him there, even though Jeff was already on his way. I was like, oh, I guess she is there. But I was, like, doubtful. Like, I thought she was going to, like, spend the last few moments of her life trying to, like, take drugs instead of, like, be with her daughters. But that's how far, like, my has fallen. And then, like, when Jeff does show up and wants to be there for his daughter instead of, like, fighting, you know, the ASA when the world's about to end, she's, like, starting shit with him as if she hasn't been an absent parent all damn season. Like, you have not been there at all, but you're getting on Jeff and calling this all his fault. Like, pot, me, kettle, nice to meet you, that kind of thing. Her, like, Anissa being like, we have to, like, do something about this Khalil situation, and, like, Lynn, like, checking out of the situation. Like, I continue just to not like what they are doing with Lynn. I feel like it's sabotage, and I feel like it's on purpose, but for what end, I don't know. I don't know who Christine Adams, like, pissed off that they hate her character so much. I don't know.
I mean, I think my biggest dislike is that, is the Lynn situation. It's just ongoing, right? Like, why did we need to see, in this episode of all episodes, see Lynn continuing to do, like, so far as to be making green light in her home? I don't know. So that for sure is a dislike. And then, if there's anything else, I think it would, I totally agree with you about the Earth 2 aesthetic. It's just, like, does no one watch The Flash? Like, Earth 2, those episodes are some of the best episodes of The Flash. And also, that was, like, one of the best depictions of an Earth. Because every other Earth has been just kind of, like, you know, either Nazis or just basically the same as everything else. So why wouldn't you want to try to recreate that? I don't know. I don't know. But, yeah. We saw Earth 3 that one time, and it was fun, and I think that we should go back to Earth 3, so maybe they could have done Earth 3, Jennifer, in that vein, but oh well. Oh well, they did not.
Yeah. It's like the multiverse, but Earths 1 and 2 are
the only Earth, yes.
Right, and even...
38 occasionally.
Yeah. Even Earth 1 doesn't make sense, because how could it be a situation where, like, an entire, you know, town was about... in the United States... was about to go under the ASA's control, and yet the other shows that are in that same Earth don't know the ASA exists and don't know about that town, you know? Like, that definitely seems like something that, like, Oliver and Barry would have wanted to check out. But oh well. So, that was Earth 1, right? Yeah. Yeah, that was Earth 1. So, like, that doesn't make sense to me. It should have been some Earth that is not our Earth. Because if there is an Earth where Black Lightning exists with his family that is the same as our Earth, then why wouldn't they already be united and part of the same crossover?
Right.
Stupid. So, yeah. I mean, aside from that, really, I don't think that there's anything. Just, you know, because, like, there wasn't very much to push for the plot, and the part that I didn't like was the Lynn part. And then probably, I guess it's just, like, the Khalil reveal's taking so long. It's just dripping, you know? Jennifer is well on the totem pole with this.
2 hour, like, 2 episodes.
Yes, he still hasn't even tried.
Walking around.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with that. It's just kind of like, okay, sure.
I think they're going one by one until they get to Jennifer finding out on her own, and you're like, oh well, you could have communicated this to her, but no one did.
Yeah.
And then Lynn trying to hide that she knew about Khalil was annoying.
Yeah.
That was a frustration.
For sure. That's annoying. And then, Lynn with Jefferson, that's just, at this point, Lynn feels like such a hypocrite, and I really hate it, because I liked her so much in season one, and I was fighting against that view of her. But now it's like, she is that. She is now what people were potentially saying she was in season one. So, whatever. Oh, well. So, that's that.
So, Paulina watched Black Lightning. She's our Black Lightning correspondent. Briefly, she says, I actually didn't love this episode. Ooh, rather surprisingly, but that's okay, because it existed to accommodate Crisis's filming schedule for Crisis, set up for Crisis. So she says, I do think China did amazingly, and I'm glad the show let her play three different Jens. Jen and Jin were on opposite ends of the spectrum, and it was fascinating to see how differently their lives turned out simply based on who they are. Nafisa really bringing the tears this season, proud of her and how much she's grown as an actress. Did love seeing the Pierce family together in the scenes again, even if the circumstances weren't ideal. I really miss them as a unit, and I'm hoping season 3B brings that back. Not going to lie, I got a kick out of seeing Red Skies and Black Lightning. I guess now I really understand why people who watch all these shows enjoy these crossovers. There's something really cool about connections between shows you love. Overall, I just found the mid-season finale sort of, I don't know, stagnant, I guess. I thought perhaps it would have been more interesting to do an Earth 2-style episode, but I know that most of it was set up for Crisis, and Jen feeling the destruction and eventual merging of the Earths was a fascinating concept. So that is Paulina. Going back to Black Lightning predictions, I don't know how this will work into the larger picture, because I'm almost positive that Jen won't show up in the back half of Crisis crossover, but Jennifer's not dead, is my prediction. Like, she didn't die in the Antimatter Wave.
Oh, okay, okay.
Saw, like, the three of them, the antimatter wave hit E1 and E2 Jennifer's, but, like, she remained. Like, she was the last one standing, and, like, the other people were gone. Mm-hmm. Plus, her physical body, when we saw on actual whatever Earth Black Lightning is actually on, it, like, disintegrated and already, like, merged into antimatter. So she's, like, alive, because she is in the antimatter, but, like, literally nowhere. So I don't know how that will factor into Crisis, because I don't think it'll matter. That's not something that matters for the crossover, but it's possible that it could mean something big for her, when she comes back post-crisis. Like, maybe she comes back different. That's all I got.
I'm down with it.
Interesting. I like it. It would be fun if she appeared in the back half, but...
I would like it, because it would...
We know nothing. It's so frustrating.
We're supposed to have, like, we're supposed to have, like, cameos and still surprises that no one supposedly knows about, but we haven't really seen it. The biggest one was, like, Lucifer, but it was already spoiled, so... You know, it would be like really like a real surprise if Jennifer actually did make a difference in Crisis, but I don't think that they think like that. So,
yeah,
but I don't think she died.
I think that it'd be really cool to have her actually be involved in the final situation. So I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously, as far as like Lady with Gumption for her episode, she was the only one that really had anything to do. So she would have been like the other nominee for Lady with Gumption of the Week. But I still think overall, sure. Kate is our crisis Lady with Gumption. So yay!
Woo! So with that in mind, I think that we can now sign off, yes?
Yes. Yes. Heading into winter hiatus.
Yes. So coming up, you'll probably see a Watchmen podcast from us at the very least.
If you're also a Patreon subscriber.
Yes. If you're a Patreon subscriber, and we may do the Elite one, unless you guys, you know, if something else more pressing comes up, then we might do that before we come back for Crisis Part 2. Or really Parts 4 and 5. So remember that you can contact us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com or ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, as well as at DCTVGumption on Twitter. Good night, good luck, and happy 2019 going into 2020.
Yay. Bye.
Bye.